And welcome to the regular meeting of Chelan County PUD Board of Directors. It's our first meeting of a new year. And anticipating a good year, strong staff, willing commission, good leadership, I think takes us in a positive direction. Commissioners present today are Commissioner Smith, Congdon, and McKenna. Commissioner Arsenault is ill today, and I don't think he's on the line. Gary, you on the phone?
Yes, I'm on the phone.
All right. I tried to ignore you, but it didn't work. My apologies. At the table is Steve Wright, our general manager, Teresa Boucher as clerk, and Eric Walquist, our attorney. And please silence your cell phones. And should yours go off, I'm going to suggest you move to Albuquerque. people who are attending as a guest, you're welcome to address the commission, and we'll set an appropriate time to do that. And with a limited time frame, and when you approach the microphone, we'd like you to give your name and address. And then, because our meetings are recorded, that gives the public the opportunity to hear who is speaking and understand who they are and where they live. Anything else that we need to address in the opening? Hearing none, we start our meetings off with a Pledge of Allegiance and Safety Minute. Tracy Yacht, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Tracy Yunt. I'm the Director of External Affairs, and I have the privilege of doing the year's first Safety Minute. So safety, first on our list of values. And a key component of safety is keeping your mind on a task. So I'm going to give a little story of why this is important to me right now, because you would not be seeing all of me, but for a piece of luck. So before the Christmas came, I was working on some projects. I do woodworking, and I've done woodworking for a long time. And I've used saws 1,000 times, but I got a little anxious, maybe, or I wasn't thinking about what I was doing. I moved a piece of wood before the saw blade had stopped, and the only thing that kept it from being worse is my wedding ring. So I have two chips on my wedding ring now. They're little burrs. I thought, well, I'll get those sanded down. I thought to myself, you know, I'm going to keep them as a reminder. So now I find myself.
You have your finger still.
I have my finger. I lost a little skin around it, but boy, it caused a real pause. I was busy. I was thinking about other things. I've done it 1,000 times, but that time I was thinking about, oh, what am I going to do here? Busy. So when I was thinking about Safety Minute, I thought about that. I had another incident. Not going to share. It was way worse. close call. But both of those were, my mind was not on the task. I was complacent, doing the same thing over and over. So I wanted to share a little bit. So when your mind's not on your task, it's usually the fear of what you had done in the past, the fear of making sure that the saw blade had stopped has kind of gone away. You're thinking about something other than what you're doing. And your most important asset, your star player, is sitting on the bench, your brain. So there was a safety consultant, Larry Wilson, who asked more than 1,200 linemen of a major electric utility, were you thinking about what you were doing when you had that close caller incident? And out of the 1,200 people that he interviewed, there were only two examples that they said, yeah, I was thinking about what I was doing when I had that close caller incident. All the others were, no, I was thinking about something else. So it's really important that the mind is the most important safety device. So everyone gets complacent with things they've done over and over again. If you're not thinking about what you're doing, your behavior will be what it has become. For me, my behavior was not thinking about the saw blade stopping before I repositioned the wood. And it's only going to change if you make a conscious effort to change it. So here are some safety-related habits. moving your eyes before you move your hands, feet, or body. Testing your footing. Who has gotten out of the car in the parking lot? Okay, so I've actually started thinking about both feet out there and testing. Who has crawled over a fence or a power cord, got the first foot over? Thank goodness, and then the second foot caused the problem. You weren't thinking about the trailing foot. Look twice when the sun's in your eyes. Look around a bit more. Anybody notice people texting while driving in the car next to you? Oh, I might move over and give them a little more room. Lightly touching something before you give it the full grab. I like to cook, but I don't like to burn. Finally, habitually looking for a line of fire. What might be coming at you at blind intersections? Because if you don't see what might be coming at you, it might be the last mistake you make.
Tracy, there's your story. There's an old education joke about what is this? And that's a shop teacher ordering four beers.
I'll leave on that.
Great.
And there's more to that story, but later. Thank you. Appreciate that. Agenda, there's some consideration being given to Resolution 9 as a candidate for the consent agenda. But commissioners, what is what are your wishes?
I think that's Resolution 10.
10? I only missed it by one.
It's agenda item.
Excuse me, agenda item.
Yeah, Commissioner, so it's already been moved.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think the agenda was switched around.
It was, and I'll apologize, Commissioners. That was something that we had made arrangements for and was planning to doing the first meeting of this year. We mentioned it as part of the delegation resolution approval, and
okay.
I think our change probably postdated Steve's memo.
Yeah.
And just to be clear, the agenda item 9 is the closeout on the $40,000 reservoir contract.
Right.
Relatively small issue.
Nice looking reservoir.
So, not hearing any objections, move 9 to the consent agenda.
So 9 is on the consent agenda, and commissioners.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. So this
yes,
is,
it is.
That was the change that was made. The
all I needed to do was what Tracy was talking about. Move my eyes a little. We'd have picked that up.
Yeah. So you will see, if you recall, as part of the direction that we were given, as part of the adoption of the delegation resolution, final acceptance resolutions will appear as a normal course of business on the consent agenda, unless there's a reason determined either by staff or commissioner's request to move it off the consent agenda.
Good plan.
Okay. Any other additions or corrections to the agenda? Thank you. Hearing that, we'll move on. Steve Wright, the Rondo River Park, please.
I want to invite Jeff Smith, Michelle Smith to come up. We're going to continue our conversation about the Arundel River Park and particularly try to focus on 2018 this year, as well as answering the questions from the last meeting where this was discussed.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning, commissioners. Michelle Smith, Licensing Compliance Director.
And I'm not Jeff Smith, but I'm Lisa Parks. I'm the Executive Director at the Port of Douglas County. And before Michelle takes off, I wanted to make sure I had an opportunity to thank the PUD Commission for all the time and energy that's been devoted to this topic. It's been a long, ongoing conversation, and I very much appreciated the thoughtfulness and the thoroughness within which your staff and you as commissioners have helped the Port of Douglas kind of take a look at this ongoing partnership. So thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. The presentation we put together today is to continue the discussion that we brought forward on December 18th. Today's purpose is primarily to talk about the 2018 interim plan, get a head nod from the board that you are okay with that plan so that we can get our arms around next steps related to Arundel Park and putting together the long-term operating plan in coordination and cooperation with the Port of Douglas County. There were a couple questions also that came forward on the 18th, so we'd like to bring back that additional information. The schedule for 2018 looks like this. We have today's meeting. Again, our goal today is to just make sure that, all the commissioners are okay with our plan for 2018. That includes not or closing the camping for 2018 so that we can complete a condition assessment, an environmental assessment, and continue to try and get that park back in safe condition and open it up for camping or whatever decision we do make going forward in 2019. But the change for 2018 would mainly be not allowing the camping so that we can kind of get our arms around things this year. In April, we plan to bring back the condition assessment, more detail around the numbers and the costs that we've started pulling together for continued operation and other alternatives that, we talked about on the 18th. And we plan to give you a schedule for how we see all of that rolling out. And then in May is when we're hoping to come back with additional information and really get your decision on the future operating plan for that park and the PUD's involvement. These are the five additional information items that I'm going to be going through in this presentation. The first I'm on slide number five, the financial support of parks with operating agreements. So what this table is providing is we have operators for these four, with these four operators, and the costs that the PUD has contributed to the park operators, either in staff labor, capital, or O&M, is the 12-year investment there is shown on the right-hand side of that table. So the important point here is that, as you can see, the Port of Douglas County with Arondo Park, the PUD over 12 years has not supported that park as financially as the other parks. The large items here under Washington State Parks in the city of Eniat does include relicensing dollars. So the major investments we put into Eniat Park, as well as the large investments we've put into Daroga and Lincoln Rock Parks, are included in those numbers.
So, yes, Michelle, so that'd be closer to $3 million for Eniat if we took out the relicensing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The park rebuild was about $6.5 million, and that was an agreement in our settlement, license settlement.
One other question, and maybe it's in here, but I didn't see it. If I don't know if we can do apples to apples, but let's say the Manson Parks District. Do we have a sense of what our costs would be if we had just taken it over, like we did the park in Chelan? We could probably compare it to the Chelan Riverwalk Park. How much greater our cost would be if we had took it back and mm-hmm. did all of the work?
And are you thinking Old Mill? Because they also operate Old Mill Park for us too.
Oh yeah.
So we have the two parks under an operating right. agreement with them. Would you like us to get that estimate for you?
That's not too much work.
Okay. I think Ryan is in the audience. You got that, Ryan? Okay. We will bring that information back for
Great.
You.
Yeah, thank you.
We wanted to provide a little additional information in terms of our Chelan PUD customers in from the survey results. So we broke out of 163 known addresses. A lot of different states and even countries reported here, but we think that's because of the different way that the computer, the iPhones and all, actually all phones and computers gather data. It's kind of hard to know where the server locations are exactly, so we're kind of interested to see all of that. But the results from just the breakdown of our PUD customers is not really that much different than we saw in the overall responses, primarily that boat launch seems to be a pretty important asset for that park. Camping is also widely liked in that park. And then we had kind of various results for these other areas, but the boat launch seems to always be the access to the river, and the location of that one is used quite a bit. So
yeah, just to interrupt for a minute, I need to go as I have an appointment that I need to be at, but I'll be back. And Secretary Steve McKenna will chair of the meeting. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner.
May I ask one more question?
Certainly.
61% satisfied with available camping on Rocky Beach Reservoir. So does that mean they're satisfied with the available camping on either side of this park, not including this park, or in this park?
So what that question was asking is there enough camping in the Rocky Reach Reservoir? Are you satisfied with the amount of camping in general of all parks within the Rocky Reach Reservoir?
Okay.
So 61% said, we think there's enough camping within that reservoir, or we're satisfied with that level.
Thanks.
This slide, the question came from Commissioner Congdon on this related to if we take the alternative, which is taking the park into more of a natural look instead of the grass lawn that's there now, you know, could there be some irrigation, some water savings? We have to do a lot more investigation on that question, but the park is on a well system. And if we removed, let's say the camping was removed and primarily the water users there are going to be the RV sites that are going to be an impact, and also trying to come up with some kind of natural area, we felt that it's going to be a fairly minimal impact because you still have to water, you still have to maintain areas. And so we just wanted to just mention that always it's not a clear black and white answer in terms of making something natural that you get to just not water and you get the savings attached with that. So we will do a little more around this as we're exploring that alternative. But I just wanted to point out that typically we don't see a lot of water savings, even if we take something to a more natural area.
Steve? So I've done that actually at a couple different places. And initially, there's not a lot of savings. But after several years, when you get some of your natural, you know, native plants growing and you know, kind of flourishing, then you can pull back on the water use. So, I mean, for me, it's been a tremendous savings and cutting back in the amount of water I've used. But it takes a little while to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So just throwing that out there.
I think you're right, and we will try and do a kind of life cycle cost with that because you would assume that would be the case in this situation. So when we bring this information back to you in April, we will try and take a long-term look at that cost and see if we can reflect that as well.
Yeah, go to California and go to Arizona and see what they've done down there to get away from massive watering of lawns. Lawns just suck a lot of water.
Yeah. And it would change the use of the park fairly dramatically, even with the day use activity. So we'd want to consider all of that. So maybe when we bring that back, we can kind of look at the change that would make to the park as well and the use of the park.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm going to actually let Lisa take this slide. If you want to go ahead and take them.
Sure. So one of the questions, as I understood it, and again, I apologize for not being here on the 18th of December. One of the questions, as I understood it, was how much of this camping area is in Aranda River Park is actually used? What's the season? I think it's often considered, at least by us locally, as being somewhat of a smaller park and somewhat inconsequential. But what I can tell you, and I have my staff working on an analysis that will be a comparison of apples to apples based on what the PUD staff has done for your other facilities. But generally speaking, I would tell you that in July and August, that campground is full. And any holiday weekend in the summertime, it is full and no extra spaces. So I think the utilization of that park for camping is pretty consistent with what you're going to see in any of the other parks that provide camping. That park serves a function that's a little bit different in many ways. It's the typical camping, but it also offers an opportunity, and the concessionaires have offered the opportunity for large groups to come in and either take half the park or in some cases allow these large church groups from the west side of the state to take the entire park for, you know, 5 days or a week or whatever, because it's small enough that they can do that. And that's something that's not as readily available on the reservoir, I would say. So it does provide that one specific unique function. But other than that, I think it is a pretty typical camping park in terms of its availability. You can probably pull in midweek and find a spot on a first-come, first-served basis. On the weekend, you're going to be pushing it a little bit in July and August particularly. And on a holiday weekend, if you don't have a reservation, you're probably not going to get a spot.
Thank you, Lisa. So the point of this slide is, as we're considering camping for the future, you know, there is availability shoulder seasons. You know, it's not that hard to get into a camping site, but generally in the peak summer season and a holiday especially, trying to find a spot anywhere in the state is almost impossible. So just something to consider as we move forward. This is just another snapshot at the different alternatives that we're going to be further exploring for you and bringing back more information in April. I'd like to mention that if any other ideas that may come to your mind or some other things you want us to consider or look at, please don't hesitate to contact me and let me know. But these are the options that we're going to be exploring further and bringing you back a little more detail in April.
Another question. So looking at this chart, I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. Maybe my brain's not working this morning very well. But so under number three, PUD manages its day use natural area. And then amenities, it says no camping, boat, launch, moorage, restroom, trails, natural areas. So the no only, that adjective only applies to the camping. And same with the one down below it. It doesn't, right. It doesn't mean no for all of those.
That's correct.
Items.
That's
okay.
Correct.
Perfect. I thought so. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. And Michelle, would you take a moment? Because with 1B, we're trying to capture Commissioner Arsenault's comment from the last meeting. I would like you just to describe that and make sure that we've gotten it correct.
Certainly. So 1B was an addition that really looked at if the PUD could partner in some way from a funding perspective, but basically write a check for operation and maintenance to the port. And then the port would continue to operate and maintain the park, hire a contractor. You know, what would that look like? So basically then we were thinking in this one that the PUD would write a check for O&M. That'd be, if, based on the numbers we have now, between 75 and 100,000. We would be done. There wouldn't be any other staff effort on that other than managing the contract for that part of it. And then the port would basically operate and maintain the park. They would use revenues to help offset some of the capital costs. There's a potential that they might be able to get some grant funding. Of course, that always requires matching funds, so that would still be something that the port would have to try and find. But in this idea here, in this alternative, it was just look at the least impact on PUD staff and costs, and if we could possibly pay the O&M and write a check to the port to help support the park, that was the idea behind that.
Would that include the initial cost of the upgrade of all the upgrades that we, you know, the docks and the marina and the bathrooms? And would the port be responsible for that under capital expenses, not the PUD?
That's a good clarification I should make. So under these alternatives, this is all considering future operation. We're still thinking that this year we have to go in and make some safety improvements to some of the items, and we have a budget of $300,000 to try and do some of those things. You have to remember half of the park is our property, and there's a gazebo as well as some erosion control efforts. There's some safety features and things that we know that we have to go in there and get up to a safe condition. And so we've budgeted some money to do that. So it does not include that concept. But in terms of the major things that are we're looking at in terms of the boat launch and the dock and some other major maintenance over time in the next five to 10 years, those are the kinds of things that we would be expecting the port to try and get some grant funding, and we wouldn't be providing the capital under Alternative 1B.
So would that include upgrading docks and getting them up to code and the bathroom? Or would that be what we initially put into it just to be a partner?
So we were thinking that we would be partially funding some of those items this year to get them up to some level of safer standard. Mm-hmm. But if they have to be, pilings have to be redone on, I know, on the boat dock, for example, that would be more of a major maintenance. It would be down the road, but not necessarily a safety item that has to be taken care of in 2018. So that would be something that we would be looking at the port to do under the capital items in the future agreement.
But what we've heard from the port is they really can't afford to do those major upgrades. So, I mean.
And maybe I'll let Lisa jump in at this point.
Yeah, so as I understood it, 1B came about as a way to try and respond to some questions and comments. And what I would say first generally is that, and I was going to cover this also sort of at the end, just generally speaking, we're just looking for a way to partner a little bit differently than we have since 1979. So what I would say generally is any of these alternatives or any mixture thereof may be what we end up with, hopefully, in May, honestly, with both your commission as well as mine. We do have a difficulty with the capital expense, largely because the revenue does not cover, it doesn't give us the opportunity to build any kind of a reserve. Mm-hmm. So as a port district, our primary source of income is tax receipts. We are property tax. We're a property taxing district. The only other source of revenue that we have are for operating items, operating assets. And the port district does have operating assets. We have the business park at Pangbourne Memorial Airport that actually is operating in the black, but we have a lot of debt associated with that, so we're paying that off. The only other three assets that we actually own as an entity are the two airports in Waterville and Mansfield, which do not operate anywhere close to being in the black, and Aranda River Park. And historically, I think, you know, maybe in 1979, there was some anticipation that there might be revenue generated out of that park as it was utilized over time. But that the reality is that that's just not been the case. And so that is the difficulty that we face with 1B specifically. That being said, if there were a partnership where we actually continue to hold the park and maintain the park, we get operating revenue to help with operating costs from the PUD. And we have, let's say, in 5 years, we have the opportunity to apply for another RCO grant to upgrade the boat dock facility. We can qualify to apply for that where the PUD can't, but there's a match that's required, and I believe it's anywhere from 25 to 50%. Mm-hmm. And so we might then, in that case, come to the PUD and say, well, will you help us with that match? And that's going to be way less, obviously, expensive than if the PUD were to take the whole thing. So that's a long ways to say, no, we don't have money for capital expenses, because if we don't have operating revenue to cover that asset, then the costs are covered by the taxpayers that pay money into the Port of Douglas.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Great explanation.
Hey.
Okay. And we will be bringing back more of this kind of laid out over time for you in April. So some of these things that need to be taken care of in the park will show a schedule for how long we think we can go before those improvements need to be made.
Can we just check, Commissioner Arsenault, do you have any comments with respect to the additional option that was added? It was really added at your behest.
Yes, thank you. And actually, this question is for Lisa. Mm-hmm. Lisa, in terms of your taxing authority, What is the ceiling, the maximum, that the Port of Douglas could pass on as a tax to the taxpayers of Douglas County? And then what are you currently charging?
So as with any other taxing authority in the state of Washington, we are capped at 101% annually. So we have the same Tim Iman limitation on the ability. So we have an aggregate tax levy. It's a total amount. And we are allowed to take that total amount and add 1% of it the following year. And we can then add also new construction value. Our tax receipts for 2018 are projected to be just barely over $1 million. That's the first time that we anticipate being over $1 million. With respect to the ability to go above and beyond that, That is it. We do have the ability with special authorization in Title 53 to do some work related to economic development, particularly in industrial areas. It's called an industrial development district, and we have the ability to do an additional industrial development district levy, but that's very specific to commercial and industrial activity, and it's that would have to be that is a tax that we could add on up to 45 cents per thousand above and beyond our normal, but it's a finite period of time, and it's a dedicated source of funds for dedicated projects related to commercial and industrial development.
Actually, my question was, what is the maximum taxing rate that you can tax at, and isn't it true that you're below that level right now?
No, that's so we do not have – no municipal authority in the state of Washington has the ability to go in and say, we're going to charge you 21 cents per thousand. What you do is you have this aggregate tax dollar, the levy itself, and then depending on what the assessed value is within the district that you cover, that's how you get the per cents or dollars per thousand. So our tax levy rate, that per thousand dollar, that per thousand number changes annually, but it's not based on us saying we're going to charge you 45 cents per thousand. It's changed based on this aggregate number that we're allowed to adopt and authorize by the state statute, and then divide it out over the property that's assessed within that district. If that makes sense.
Thank you.
Probably not. it's a complicated property tax assessments in the state of Washington are very complicated, and they've changed. When the IMIN initiatives went into place in the 90s, the way we assess taxes changed. We used to be able to say, we're going to go in and we're going to charge. Actually, the Port District statutes allow us to charge initially up to 45 cents per thousand. We can't set our tax rate like that any longer because it's capped by the 101% requirement of the Tim Iman initiatives. It was first at 106. We used to be able to add 6%. And then since the 2000s, we've only been able to add the 1% per year.
So Lisa, that the aggregate amount that you talked about is what is capped at 100%, 101%.
Correct.
So you can only increase that amount 1% a year.
Right.
Plus new construction.
So for example, our tax levy, the tax levy that we had for 2017 was about $950,000. So when you look at our levy that we passed just a couple months ago for 2018, we say it's $950,000 plus the 1%, which is $9,500, mm-hmm. plus new construction, and that's where you get to the just barely over $1 million, and that's the maximum that we are able to charge as a tax levy. And we can't go in and mess with the per thousand number. It's not authorized any longer.
Randy?
Well,
thank you.
Mine isn't a question as much as it is a few comments as it relates to this and getting down to probably your last page. First, I want to say, Michelle, thank you for meeting last week. It answered some of my questions. Didn't answer all of them. And I hope to maybe a little bit address them here today while giving you that nod of support for the interim plan, because the question that I asked at the last meeting, I was, and it's fortuitous that I see the mayor of Antioch here this morning. Good to see your smiling face. that there are two communities that were probably more directly impacted by Rocky Reach Dam than any other communities, and that's Antioch and Arondo. I've got a lot of friends on both sides of the river in the ag industry. I know the impact was pretty significant 60 years ago with the raising of the reservoir, and I have a particular fondness in my heart for us recognizing the displacement that occurred over the long term. That being said, the page that you presented in this presentation that you did not have before highlighted some things that I think really needed to be highlighted, and that was how much we have supported our other parks and how much we have not supported Douglas Park, or the Port of Douglas Park. That really did highlight an issue that I think we need to address in the, on the capital side. At the same time, the question that you couldn't get to on my behalf that I still think is important is, while I recognize that our parks are for use for everybody, and that's part of our licensing, and so the parks get used by a broad array of people, I'm particularly sensitive to the community of Arondo itself and how they feel about the day use versus a overnight use of their park, whether the local residents would perhaps use it more if it was just a day use. I don't know that answer, and we couldn't get to that answer, but I appreciate you trying. So anyway, I just wanted to lay those particular issues that are in my mind out, while at the same time saying, maybe 2018 as a day use only facility, we might get a different picture of what it might look like going forward, as to the use, who uses the park, how heavily it gets used as a day use park this upcoming year. So it'll be an interesting year. So, you know, I say we need to move ahead.
Mm-hmm. So take one more question, and we'll open it up to the public.
Just one more. In the survey that went out, were there any questions pertaining to for the local people, how do you feel about large groups coming in from the west side? And because when a large group of 125 kids comes in and uses that park overnight for a week, that completely shuts out all the local folks and the local use. Was that posed as one of the questions, or?
So not specifically that way. We did try and get in the questions, you know, specifically, you know, were people interested in day use, boat launching, camping, things like that. We were trying to get an interest, some information on interest, which is what we got, but we weren't able to really dissect that down to, was it someone in Arondo that was giving us that information? Mm. And it's hard sometimes to get addresses to do that. We tried. But I do think that over the next few months and this year, Commissioner, you had a good point. I think there's opportunity to try and get more information to bring back to you on that information. And maybe there's some other ways working with our communications department that we can maybe reach out and try and get some more local information from the Arondo area than we received previously. So maybe we can find ways to build that in and bring back some more information. So I'll work on that.
Yeah, just some personal conversations with some of the folks, you know, in the Arondo area would be helpful.
It seems like more of something that we should be able to do, and I will make it personally my goal to try and bring back more information on that question.
Yeah. Thank you.
And if I may just address the issue, and thank you for the concern. I appreciate that. I think Michelle mentioned this to me, and speculating about it, I would say that I'm only speculating and would reserve your permission to take back anything that I say right now. But my perception would be that it's a little bit different than INTIAT, only because it was not as large of a community. It was not incorporated. My understanding is that the inundation did not necessarily affect the business community or the community center of Arondo similarly that it did, the raising of the pool did to the city of INTIAT. And honestly, this has not been a park. This was not a park. There wasn't a park available to the community prior to the Port District first in the early 70s and the PUD second in the late 70s providing this. So it's never been a city-provided or community-provided park. So I think there's a lot of ownership in the community to a certain degree. I don't think it's at the level or intensity of the city of INTIAT necessarily. Mm. That doesn't mean that the opportunity doesn't exist for that to occur. When I started at the Port of Douglas in 2011, my understanding was the Port District Commission had decided specifically to operate the park that year, which they didn't tell me that before I accepted the job. Mm. But before they decided, the reason they decided to operate the park and to do it on a first-come, first-served basis is because the community was missing out on the day use and community access piece. It was more the concessionaires who had been there in the past were long-term concessionaires. There were a lot of repeat business, and so it was really hard to get into that park to access it for day use by the community members. And so that's been a focus for the Port of Douglas moving forward, both the year that we operated it as well as the concessionaires that we had after that. We wanted to make sure that they were making the park available for day use, particularly for the community. I think, long story short, it could be the type of asset that has that community connection, similar to the city of Antioch. It doesn't right now, although it does have some. The community church there utilizes the park on Easter Sunday for a sunrise service, and there are other community activities that occur. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. So to wrap up, I wanted to go back to the staff recommendation for 2018, see if there's any concerns about us approaching this year with the no camping, but managing the park for day use operation, including the boat launching and completing the condition and environmental assessments and coming back to you in April and in May.
Any further feedback on that recommendation?
I'm good with it.
So I think
we got our head nod.
Head nod there, and just checking to see if there's any public comment on this before we move on. All right.
All right. Thank you very much,
Lisa. Thank you for your time with us.
Thank you. Thank you again.
We'll move forward and continue to study this.
Great. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
So at this time, I would like to invite Mr. Clark up to address us concerning Bitcoin. Welcome. If you'd like to come up and use the in the mic.
Well, we record this.
We record this, and so to get that on tape, we need to have you up here. Please say your name and your address. And
my name is Nathan Clark, 596 Mount Joy Square, East Wenatchee.
Great.
And good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Someone told me that spring is around the corner.
And Mr. Clark, with all public comment, we limit that to about 3 minutes.
I represent a grassroots group that is concerned about our public power and about the cryptocurrency Bitcoin threat and the HDLs that are a threat to our power block and our regional economy. I'll just read a few little things. PUD power is being threatened severely by Bitcoin bad actors, cryptocurrency, which is burgeoning. They're requesting large quantities of power, which were virtually equal to some of our city power loads. It's really, really alarming. Cryptocurrency and Bitcoins were originally Ponzi schemes by bad actors who create investment bubbles, rapidly increasing crypto stock. When these bubbles collapse, investors are pretty much ruined. The article in the World recently dealt with investors sue Gigawatt Bitcoin for securities malfeasance, SEC. This is going to be the year of suing these bad actors, so we don't want to be involved with that. Bitcoin currencies were originally created to avoid taxes, bank oversight, to launder money by bad organizations. The organizations nowadays are trying to create investment money, but they build the bubble, pop it, and then they run away with people's money. We do not want the PUDs to be entrapped in this or to yield any of their power to these groups, which really belongs to the community and the economy. Therefore, our recommendation to the PUDs is to immediately declare or redeclare a moratorium against these cryptocurrencies, educate the public to their threat, and to charge HDLs 5 times the normal charge as a way of controlling these HDLs from absorbing all the community's money or power, which is reserved for growth, and economic development. They do that, and then they only pay local charges. So we need to increase our scheduling charges to discipline them, because we feel that these bubbles are going to pop, and the PUDs and the communities and the individuals will be really damaged. We advise everybody to check out cryptocurrency and bitcoins on their cell phone, Google, to be informed what they really are. Perhaps future cryptocurrencies will evolve with laws and institutions to make them safer. Maybe not. Until then, buyers and PUDs, please be aware of this danger and this threat of Bitcoin currencies. And then we are sending this letter to all of these people on this list that we gave you, gentlemen. And we're going viral with it to educate the public about this threat. And we just want to work with the PUDs, which we really think are the apple of the valley, the apple of the whole region. And we really thank you for all that you do and want to support you to the fullest.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you for caring.
Appreciate your time. All right. Next up, we're going to talk about a related subject. We have been feeling like for a while that load growth is a really significant issue for us. It impacts our need for infrastructure investment, our capital investments, and ultimately our rates as well. So we already provide you a quarterly update on financial information, on the things that are going on in the wholesale market. We've decided this year to institute a quarterly update on electric load growth in the county. And this will be the first of those presentations, so a chance for you to see what's going on, what we've seen in the last few months that's going on, and be thinking about it in terms of how useful the information is to you and how you would like it to be presented in the future. With that, I'll turn it over to the team.
Good morning, commissioners. Andy Wendell, Director of Customer Service.
Chad Rissman, Director of Engineering and Distribution Asset Management.
So today, the purpose of this presentation is just to share some insights with the board relating to what we're seeing as new trends in our customer growth and expansion. We're seeing enough change in the landscape that we think that, as Steve mentioned, we'd like to bring a quarterly update to you. The landscape looks a lot different looking forward than it did looking behind us. We'll talk a little bit today about how we see this changing landscape impacting our business and some of the short and long-term strategies that we're putting into place. We're not asking the board for any action today. This is just an update. But if there's additional questions or thoughts, if this provokes, we'll certainly be able to respond to those. Some of the major drivers that we see today, looking forward, is obviously at the national level of the state and the local levels. We're seeing improved confidence around economics and commerce. Earlier this year, I know that there was some discussion in the Tri-Commission's meetings regarding a relative housing shortage in Chelan County and what some of the governmental entities and private developers were doing with respect to the housing shortage. And we're certainly seeing that come to fruition today. There's a big interest in improving housing shortage and changes in land zoning to accommodate that. Without a doubt, the popularity of the cryptocurrency mining has increased as we anticipated, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the specifics in there, but there certainly is a major attraction to our low-cost, abundant hydroelectric resources in the cryptocurrency arena. There are other technologies, new technologies, that are looking towards our region. It both in the agricultural sector and just new technologies that we haven't seen before, in addition to the cryptocurrency, that are looking to come here. Clearly, we are a recreational a center, and we're seeing a lot of interest in increasing our recreational opportunities in the form of recreational opportunities that require a large energy consumption. And climate change. That's something that we're seeing changing our peak loads as well as kind of the timing of those peak loads. So we've got some really smart people looking at our load forecasting. We're trying to figure out how that fits in with this customer growth and expansion as well.
It's a little bit all about how some of those drivers and challenges are impacting our businesses today. One of the things that we do, as Andy mentioned here, is load forecasting group is looking into the future. One of the tools that we use is we look at the past and make some forecasts on what the future might look like based on the past. We don't feel like that no longer is adequate entirely. We have other things that are affecting things. Andy mentioned climate, but temperatures vary what our loads are quite a bit, so that we can mask, or our actual growth can be hidden within temperature changes, with climate changes, with conservation measures. The other thing is historically zoning within the county or the city, for example, residential 5, residential 10, was fairly straightforward on how to impact or how to forecast what the load was going to be, electrical demand for those areas were going to be. Because those areas are being used slightly different, it's a little more difficult to forecast what those look like.
Before I forget it, just a quick question. Something you said sparked a question. Over the last 5 years, we probably have pretty good records of how much we think our conservation has saved us as a percentage of our total portfolio of what we use. And I don't expect you to have the number on your fingertips right now, but over the last 5 years, how much has that saved us in terms of load that we would have without it?
Several megawatts. I don't have the number here.
Yeah, but it'd be interesting to see that, because that really will tell a story.
And our system demand can change by several megawatts just because of temperatures that are going on. So oftentimes it's really difficult to actually pull out and understand what is changing, how much conservation is there. So those are some enhancements that we want to make to our planning and forecasting capabilities. Some of the other challenges that this is causing us is the stretching of our staff. So we're seeing we have a slide coming up that illustrates this and talks a little bit about that, but we're seeing a lot of requests that are coming in, and we're having to perform system studies, looking at what the impacts are to our systems, rates, those kinds of things. So that's requiring a significant amount of staff time. Limited system capacity is consumed at a much faster pace. So what we've done is siting, let's say, for example, a substation to last for the next 40 years. What we understand is we want to try to create enough or plan for enough spare capacity within that substation to last for that next 40 years, but that can all go away with one request. So how do we manage and understand how that works? Infrastructure siting, so much related to that, the expectations around siting infrastructure, as we've found out recently, there's a lot more concerns about what the impacts are to communities and siting infrastructure, so it requires sort of a partnership there that we work through, and it just takes additional time. Our technology is limited in supporting necessary analytics and operations. Said this at the very beginning, we want to enhance our capabilities to improve our analytic capabilities, so we understand what our load growths look like, maybe down at the sector level. Collaborating with the county and municipalities. So it's the county and the municipalities that are actually defining what the load growth regions are through the Growth Management Act. That's the county and the municipalities that are identifying where the loads are going to grow, that are managing sort of this urban sprawl that was laid out in the Growth Management Act. So we want to partner with them to understand better what we anticipate to be improvements or expansions or growth additions based on those zoning districts. Policies, regulations, and revenue recovery. So a lot of things that I mentioned here is what policies and procedures that we need to put in place to ensure that we're recovering what our revenues and things are. We've done some recent work with HDL rates. Those go up to 5 megawatts. But what does it look like beyond that, or other mixes of customer uses, making sure that there are adequate cost recovery mechanisms in place? So this graphic, we worked a lot with this graphic. I don't want to get too far into it. The load forecasting group is, this is some of the information that the load forecasting group maintains and monitors. But what I wanted to show here is sort of illustrate that challenge that we have. The bars here are the number of new connections. So this is just simply a new residential or commercial customer, a single meter connects up. It's irrelevant of the different loads, but this is the net increase of the number of new services. So it just shows there's variability in that. We've also had in 14 a pretty big jump in that. In 16 and 17, there's another big jump. We're coming out of a area where that was somewhere around 200 or less than 200 for the last 5 years. We're seeing a pretty big increase in just that, I'll call it organic or sort of our traditional increases in the number of requests for service. The line graph there shows the increase annually in the amount of load. We just wanted to show that there's variability there with that. But the jump from 16 to 17 was 20 megawatts. We understand that about 8 megawatts of that is this HDL load. There's also other things that are going on within that increase. 20 megawatts is a lot for a single year where we're forecasting to be somewhere around 1 to 2%. This is a bigger increase of that. Well, this is not weather normalized. In other words, we had some really cold temperatures in the months of this, the months of 2017, which caused load or energy usage to increase. So there's temperature in here, there's conservation in here, there's other things that are happening in here that we need to understand a little bit better. So just wanted to try to illustrate how things are changing within here. We're getting a lot of new requests. We need to continue to advance our forecasting capabilities there with better analytics.
So those numbers that you're looking at, I'm looking at that line where the actual load change. If I go back to 2011, there was about a 7 megawatt increase in the to 12. It flattened out. In 13, it was up about 5, and then it went a little bit negative. But all of these are cumulative based on the previous year?
Correct. So it's just a difference or a change previous year.
Yeah.
And it just shows variability, but like I said, there's weather components, there's conservation components, there are new loads, subtracted loads. In 2015, we had the fires where there was some loss in infrastructure, buildings, and some of the ag industry got hit out of some of the fires and the Chelan fires. There was load that was lost. So all of those things look like there's changing of loads, when in reality there's just variability that's occurring within the year. We need to get a better handle on that.
So talking about the cryptocurrency specifically, just going back to our history a little bit, we all know that back in 2014, 2015, we saw this new load type developing, this HDL, and we went through a good year and a half. Felt like 10 years, but it was more of a year and a half, 2 years of policy and rate evaluation. We came out of that with putting that new rate and policy action into place around January 1st of 2017. When we started policies and rates around HDL, the value of the Bitcoin, the currency, was around $300. Around the time that we implemented the rates, it was around $1,100 or, you know, plus or minus a few hundred dollars there in 2017. And by no cause by us, we immediately saw a sharp increase in the value of that that particular cryptocurrency. So from, you know, January 1 of 2017 to date, you can see that the value peaked up around $19,000 for this particular exchange. The resultant of that was pretty significant to us because quite literally, as you could see the value increasing, so was the volume of telephone calls or emails coming into the PUD by prospective cryptocurrency miners. We put that into kind of a summary slide here. And the first bullet here, you know, we have had well over 75 inquiries, inquiries that can come in from walk-ins, phone calls, emails, you name it. And we saw that number of inquiries over a relatively short period of time, about 2 months. I want to pause and give staff some credit here. The 75 inquiries from HDL miners over that period of time is relatively significant and far outside what we normally do. If you consider those 8 weeks, that's an average of about two per day that staff were evaluating. People like Lyle Moore, Carrie Wendell, Kathy Melton, others have been fielding those, and it was not uncommon to see those people just dedicated to these HDL inquiries every day, all day long. The inquiries range between 5 kW and 100 megawatts. So to put that in perspective, 5 kW could be some mining inquiries in a small residential home all the way up to a very large industrial setting. And those inquiries were everywhere in between there, which was a change for us because prior to 2017, we were seeing applications in the more commercial and industrial sectors. Now we're starting to see requests for HDL mining in a non-traditional area, what we call mixed uses, specifically in the residential housing. And that is causing some ancillary problems with infrastructure that we're concerned about. We're putting some practices in place to try to identify and mitigate those. But the significance of that is the cryptocurrency mining, the interest in that is spanning all sectors of our customer classes. Again, one characteristic regarding the HDL customers is they've stayed true to leasing space. Over 95% of them are continuing to lease available space. And in Chelan County, there is some available space. The mixed use, the residential use, a lot of that is also in rented properties. And the other characteristic that's holding true is that many of the inquiries are from outside the area. Although there is a growing interest among traditional Chelan County customers, a lot of this is coming from, you know, out of state, out of the region, and sometimes folks from other countries in the world.
Question?
Yes.
Andy, how are these inquiries, requests being handled right now? There's been no real change in policy, right? But so
that's correct. So
status of it right now.
Mm-hmm. So I would say that we're doing our best to respond to all inquiries. And as I mentioned, they're ranging from the 5 kW up to the 100 megawatts. There is a point in there at the 5 megawatt range,
right,
that our policies, our rates, our service regulations are designed to handle those requests. And I think we're doing a relatively good job of being responsive to those requests. However, when you get above the 5 megawatt range into the what we call a rate schedule 4, where you're talking about contracts and major infrastructure components, we haven't had a lot of those historically. In fact, we don't have any customers on that at this point in time. And so we're working right now. Lindsay Mons is leading a committee to try to get our arms around how to best receive those applications and process those applications. And we're working with our senior management team on some of those recommendations moving forward as well. But we don't have all the answers right now, and they're difficult. We've asked those applicants to be patient with us as we learn and try to figure out a way to bring them in a fair and equitable manner.
So they know we're in kind of a transition period, and they're being told that.
We've done our best to inform them of that, yes.
Probably also need to come back to you with the question of pace, because we already had, and we're going to talk probably a conversation that we're going to have with the board about what kind of priorities do we set here, and are there things that we compromise on in our existing district performance plan in order to be able to accommodate these potential needs. So more to come, because we want to think through, be able to ask a question in a meaningful way about how much additional work is it, what types of compromises would be required. But that's a conversation that's coming probably.
Yeah, because if we have people requesting 50 megawatts, that's a huge, huge amount. That's a huge jump. And so are we talking about what are we going to do with these? Are we going to cap them? Are we, you know, it seems like we have a tremendous amount of work to do before we even go there.
We have to know also exactly what our parameters are given state law. We have an obligation to serve at some level.
Right.
So there are some things here in terms of studies that the district is not completely in control of. So we have the things that we have to work through, which we're in the midst of working through right now, just saying what questions need to be answered and how much time might it take to answer those. And again, that second question will come in the context of to what extent will we prepare to compromise our existing objectives.
Well, and just to go one step further, so this obligation to serve, I would look to Eric, our legal guy, our legal guru, because do we have an obligation to serve somebody that comes in from out of the country that does not have any residency here, that has virtually no employees? You know, I mean, are there any?
So, Commissioner, for public purposes, all I would tell you is that while there is a duty to serve, there are conditions and limits on the duty to serve.
That's what I'm interested in, what those
It's not an absolute guarantee or obligation to turn the power on upon request.
Right.
So
that's what we need to know.
Rather not get into all of those specifics in public session. Happy to provide more information under the privilege. But I can say that it is not absolute. There are limits on that. Some of those that Steve had mentioned, conditions. Certainly we have issues surrounding our ability to serve and a timeline within which we might be able to serve. And then, of course, all of the appropriate conditions and rates and charges associated with serving any load, not just those special or requested large loads that we're talking about today.
So I'd like to ask a question. This point is that the new commissioner, I guess after a year you can't use that excuse anymore. But I guess this comes in a question of, I observed you all going through a process as not as a commissioner of taking your time and working out all the details up to that certain point, 5 megawatt or whatever that is. It appears to me, and this is the question, is it appropriate then to do the same type of due diligence of saying, we've got policies and we can handle up to this, but from here on out or here and above, this is new territory and we need some time to create those policies and work through the engineering and see. Is that, I mean, I'm not hearing that being asked for, but is that, when does that happen and should it happen? And
address the HDL concerns. So we need to do that same work and be able to present that to you and then have the conversation about, okay, this is what we think it will take in order to respond to 100 megawatt requests, multiple 100 megawatt requests, and then think about, okay, so what does that mean in terms mm-hmm. of issues like moratoriums or other options, mm-hmm. or can we just deal with that in the normal course of business?
Yeah.
So we're not prepared yet to answer that. Okay. Because this is, these are really large loads that have come at us relatively quickly, last 30 to 45 days, and we're in that process of thinking through. So, how much time and effort will it take for
part of the reason why we wanted to come up with a reoccurring update. There's a number of efforts that are going to be moving forward as a result of, quote, this headline. There's a number of issues and things that are going on. Andy mentioned a group that's got legal, engineering, planning, and trading, engineering, and a number of representatives from various parts of the district to try to work through some of what the processes and procedures are. So we'll be back, and this conversation will continue.
And an additional question, I recognize, you know, that our neighboring PUDs, Grant and Douglas, have been receiving inquiries also. Do you have the ability to share information and find out if it's the same people?
That's, yeah, that's interesting that you observe that. We're observing that too, and we're having conversations with our neighboring utilities. In addition to utilities within the state of Washington, Oregon, and Idaho, they're all seeing an increase and an uptake in the inquiries for HDL. I think if you go back to our heat map that showed the energy rates, you know, there was the white spot
in the middle,
but there's also a yellow spot, which is, you know, the Pacific Northwest that has a relatively attractive rate. With the value of the coin, what we're seeing is there's more interest in acquiring energy from a higher rate utility as well. So we just have a couple more slides here. Before we leave that one, though, I just wanted to just point out that that is an ASIC server. That's a cryptocurrency mining server in that picture. They're about as big as my iPad here, just a little bit taller, but they run at about a 1.23 kW. So just to put that in perspective, it's relatively a lot of energy use compact into a small unit. So we spent a considerable amount of time on this particular slide, and it's really designed to give you just a 30,000-foot view of what type of loads that we're seeing throughout the Chelan County area. I just want to just pause and make sure that we're understanding that these are loads that are in the pre-application stage, meaning we're having conversations with folks for these loads, or they could be applied loads, and we're working through the engineering analyses and the construction of infrastructure. So they span a very broad range. I want to caution you to recognize that this may not, many of these loads may not come to fruition. These are the applied loads, and we all know that what you connect versus what translates into actual loads can be different based on your load factors and the ramping of this energy. But this is kind of the landscape that we're seeing. I just want to take a few minutes and talk about each one of the various areas in a summary. But clearly in the Leavenworth area, there is a housing shortage up there. We've heard that on many fronts, and you can see that there are load requests in the form of apartments and housing development in there that are much higher than we've seen traditionally, as well as commercial installations. There's a big attraction to that town, and there's a need to increase loads relative to restaurants and that. Moving up to Chelan, there's a mix of really three major components. The recreational component is growing, as well as the housing. There's a major residential footprint in Chelan that just continues to grow, as well as a new presence in Chelan, which is HDL inquiries. It's an area that's been relatively quiet with HDL. However, we're seeing an uptake there as well. In Cashmere, there's really not much going on in the residential sector, a few homes here and there, but it's primarily growth in the HDL arena and then some commercial growth in the ag. Over in Eniat, it's pretty quiet up there other than they've got some great land along the river, and some of the HDL miners have found that property and have inquired quite a bit.
With nice big buildings.
With nice big buildings and nice big loads, if you will. So that's a big area of interest. And then down in Wenatchee, probably relative to Chelan's very active area, we've got some combined very large load requests for HDL. Some of them have gone through the application process. Some of them are still in the inquiry process. Some of them are just simply waiting for us to give the signal to receive formally those applications. But in our recreational sector, in our ski areas, they're looking for expansion, growth and expansion up there. There are some loads in residential, and then our ag community is seeing improvements or developments in our ag community in the form of water pumping storage as well as automated fruit storage. I will say that I just wanted to caveat that we have a load forecasting team here at the utility made up of smart people that are taking this information and trying to translate that into what our forward projections are. And those also will help inform an IRP, Integrated Resource Plan update. So we're working with them to try to synthesize this type of information into a long-range load forecast. So we'll be coming back. I think the load forecast update is in April this year, and we'll be coming back with a more synthesized look at what this may translate into actual loads.
So on that organic growth of 40 megawatts on a load base of something a little bit over 200, is that how much bigger than normal is that pre-request at this moment in time versus what you've seen in the past?
Sure. So for the purposes of defining organic load or organic growth, this is just the traditional commerce that we see in residential, commercial, industrial. Really, it's non-HDL related growth. And it is an increase. We, I think, traditionally may see a 20 megawatt connection, plus or minus. But we're definitely forecasting an increase in our organic growth as well. And as Chad had mentioned, in some of the challenges that we face is that our system really is looking at capital improvements associated with meeting that organic growth. And so if that is twofold, and then we pile the HDL requests on top of that, it presents us with some very unique
challenges. Only four or five extra substations.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And just a reminder, our load forecast is a little above 2% annual growth rate, which is somewhere between 4 to 5 megawatts per year. Now, all those may not occur in 1 year.
Right.
But that just puts it in context of what we're currently planning for and budgeting for and planning rates for.
That's a good point. I mean, I look at this as what's knocking on the door right now. Right. So what's knocking on the door, staff is trying to work through and process all those things, which is one of the challenges of working through these.
Are they knocking on the door or kicking tires?
Actually, they're crawling under the door.
So there's a number of things that we want to continue to come back to and provide updates and work with the board. A number of these efforts are going to work into separate efforts. But some of the things that we're doing here in the very near term is hiring some more folks. Engineering, system planning, field engineering, try to work through some of these requests and work with customers understanding what the impacts could or may be of these requests. So we're hiring some additional staff here this year. We talked about new substations. These were already in the works, Leavenworth, North Shore Chelan, and Old Station. We have three substations over the next few years that we'll be putting online and putting in place. We're working on those right now. Technology improvements. So this goes back to our advancing our capabilities in forecasting and advancing our capabilities with analytics. So the customer information system, meter data management, OMS, outage management systems, our geographical information system. We need to use and leverage these technologies in a new way so that we can understand better what is occurring down at the end use level, instead of at the aggregate level, because we saw in the graphic, temperature and conservation, all those things are affecting the aggregate. We need a better understanding what's happening down at that ground level. Maintaining flexibility in our and budgets and future budget modifications. I think what we're trying to say here is that we're forecasting things out based on what's been happening in the past. We expect that to be different here, at least in the near term, in the future. And so we expect that at some point in time, we might be having some budget change requests and some other requests over and beyond what we've already identified in our business plans. Reprioritizing capital projects to respond to immediate load growth. We may have to reschedule some of our capital investments and moving things around in order to meet the priorities, as Mr. Wright said at the beginning of this. Developing transmission studies based on large load requests. Our transmission group right now is working on what does this look like when we perform a system impact study, and what is the impacts of these requests potentially on regional transmission flows regionally. Developing a large load request intake process. Lindsay's leading up a group that are parts of legal, parts of engineering, planning, and trading, and engineering, a number of groups throughout the district trying to understand what this looks like. So when somebody makes a request, how can we be consistent? Our duty to serve, what's that look like? So rates, revenue, recovery. So trying to put all those things together. And mentioned this before, engaging the county and municipal planning corridors. And there's some folks here today. So we're trying to reach out, partner better with our municipalities, because as I mentioned before, they are the ones that are leading the management of growth and how growth changes. They have the statutory authority to manage this growth, where we're trying to respond to the utility side of what is needed to that. So looking and managing that better and partnering up with the county and municipalities would be a good thing for us. So what about longer term? We've talked about advancing our infrastructure planning and load growth models, AMI. AMI is going to help us understand what's happening down at the grassroots level by measuring and monitoring what's going on at the end use customers rather than just the net. And we need to move up future substation planning considerations, giving to capacity planning in the various areas to try to meet some of these requests that are knocking on the door. How does that change what infrastructure we build and when? And like I said, reevaluating our revenue sources. What are our rates, our policies, some of the questions that came up today? How are we going to respond to revenue recoveries, policies on what gets connected, how capacities are utilized, those kinds of things to future coming attractions. With that.
Just a comment. So I'm looking here, engage county and municipal planning in pursuit of corridors and properties. This would be a good report to include. I'm kind of looking at Jeff Smith on our agenda for tri-commission meetings. Maybe at every tri, because we meet quarterly, pretty much quarterly? Yeah, so I think this would be a really good report for every tri-commission meeting.
Commissioners, any other questions or comments?
Great job. Thank you.
Keith, as mayor of Enea, do you have anything to share? I look at that chart. It's Enea, 100 megawatts.
Yeah, we have a...
Would you like to come up and use the microphone? And...
Well, I don't have much to say other than we do have people that are inquiring. So you know as much as I do about that.
Thank you. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. This time we're going to talk, introduce the District 2018 Performance Plan.
Have you seen the latest ACPA magazine that came out? There's a good article in there about the Midwest is getting a lot of...
So let me say that we're getting ready here to provide you the 2018 District Performance Plan. This is our setting of priorities for 2018. I think it's important to note that we start from our mission statement to provide sustainable, reliable utility services that enhance the quality of life in Chelan County, and our vision statement to be valued as an innovative, trusted, and highly respected public utility for generations to come. You put those two things together, and I think that what happened in the strategic plan, that translated into the best value for the most people for the longest period of time. So we start from there, and I want to point out something else that in the strategic plan, we have many times talked about that as three big priorities, but there were seven overall priorities described there. And as you go through the district performance plan, you'll find these are divided into the seven priorities. So those were number one, commit to the highest level of customer owner satisfaction. Number two, invest in creating long-term value. Number three, protect natural resources impacted by operations. Number four, ensure financial stability. Number five, make continuous improvement in efficient, effective, compliant, and risk-assessed operations. Number six, enhance the capability of Chelan PUD staff. And number seven, make our values the focus of relationships with customers, stakeholders, and each other. And remember, our values are safety, trustworthiness, stewardship, and operational excellence. So what we're going to do is go through this. We will not have enough time with what's remaining before lunch to get through all of it. So we'll stop at noon, and then come back to it in the afternoon after we finish with the resolution process. With that, we're going to walk through this, and I'm going to ask Kelly to start with a description of how this is laid out to help you understand some of the key things that you'll be seeing.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Kelly Boyd, Chief Financial and Risk Officer, and this document is near and dear to my heart. Steve has described that it's organized by our seven objectives, and then underneath that it gives the details of both metrics and action items that we're focused on. And what I'd like to point out as a enhancement for this year, as you heard of talk about priorities, we have enhanced our information around how to prioritize these items so that this can be a working document for staff as we work through our planning and executing on those plans during the year. So the left-hand column that you see, you'll see it has a P1, P2, or an S in that left-hand column. And on the very last page at the bottom, it does have a key to the description of those. And a P is one of our primary goals that is of the highest priority. And an S is a stretch goal, which are goals that are beneficial and important, but we would only do these if we could do them as time and resources allow without sacrificing our core activities and our ability to complete those primary goals. So the enhancement that we made this year was we took the P, or the primary items, and divided it into a P1 and P2, with P1 indicating that these are our highest priority goals that really don't have very much flexibility in the timing and when those need to be accomplished, while P2 are still highest priority goals, but they have more flexibility regarding the timeline of when they need to be executed and if they can be delayed or changed on the timeline and still accomplish them appropriately. So that will help as we anticipate with our large workload and very ambitious schedule for the year. That will help us when we do have to make tough decisions on priorities to let us know which priorities can be sequenced differently than maybe the original plan if needed. So with that,
Kelly, I might have been reading when I should have been listening. I got the P and the two, but there's another one in front or two in front of some of these. So you have a P21 and a P12.
So that second column is the objective number. Yeah, the numbering of all of these is a little bit challenging. So you see the priority, then the objective number, and then within that objective, the numbering sequence to help try to locate actions within the document. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mike, who's going to start with the description of the details.
Good morning. Mike Coleman, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecommunications, and I have the privilege of having the first two items on here. Objective 1A, the fiber expansion premises passed as part of the public power benefit, and this is consistent with the presentation I did on December 4th. We're planning on a total of 1,059 new premises passed in 2018. The fiber installation service interval also is consistent with the past metric. It measures the longest time that a valid order sits in the system prior to it being placed in service. I will note that for 2018, we reduced it from 21 days to 14 days without adding FTEs, but simply enhancing the process and the focus.
Commissioners, John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Service. I have the third one of that objective, and that's the customer satisfaction survey, where we've set a fairly high target of greater than 90%. I'll be touching more on this later because we're up to refresh that customer satisfaction survey this quarter.
Commissioner Steve Wright, and I've got all of item D, which has to do with maintaining, updating, and providing reporting on the strategic plan. We'll be carrying out the same activities we have in the past, where we do an update in the spring and provide that information to the county. One new piece that we're adding is we're already looking forward to the 2020 to 2024 strategic plan. We would like to conduct that strategic planning process in 2019 and be finished before the end of the year so that we can actually use it for our business plans and incorporate it in our budgets. And in order to do that, we need to have our strategic planning materials, at least the first step of that, completed by the end of this year so we can start the process most likely in December of 2018.
Commissioners, Jeff Smith, Managing Director of District Services. We're still on page one, about halfway down. We will continue the public power benefit program this year, working from the existing inventory of projects. The next expected solicitation for new projects would be next year, and that would be for projects in 2020.
I have the next one, Objective 1F1, the fiber expansion through Q4. This is the project piece of the public power benefit expansion, and this is where we measure the milestones of all the other work that's associated with that. But most particularly, in 2018, we're also designing for the following year, so we have milestones related to getting the area selected and designed for 2019.
Good morning. This is Lorna Klemanski, Managing Director of Human Resources, Labor, and Safety. I'm looking at item F2. We will continue investing in and preparing for the future by developing a pipeline of work-ready talent. And these are all programs that we have already been performing and conducting, so this is nothing new.
Morning, Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. I'm on item F3. It has to do with another public power benefit project to the hydro research efforts. Public power benefit funding so far has covered mainly pilot and design work, and we're planning to bring back to you a recommendation by the end of the second quarter on where to go with the next steps, moving from pilots to development on research efforts.
So I just have a question. So Kirk, why would that be a stretch goal and not a P2 goal with an inflexible timeline?
That's actually a really good point. It's as resources are available to perform this, although with the timeline, we're planning to hit that. So we have resources working on this right now, but if push comes to shove and we have to divert resources towards something like the HDL effort, that would be one that would slip.
So that's why it's an S.
Yeah.
We'd like it to be a P2, but yeah. Okay. Cool.
Greg Carantine, Managing Director of Energy Resources. I'm talking about item F4, which is the electrification research and collaboration. The focus on this one is primarily electric vehicles. We've been looking at those for over 2 years. We participated in a regional electric vehicle study. We are currently under contract with Western Washington University doing a literature review about participation in electric vehicle fields. We are also participating with a regional electrical vehicle group. We plan on coming back to you in Q1 with an update as to where we stand on that and then make recommendations as to how to proceed by Q4.
Commissioners, still on page two, the public power benefit projects. We expect to increase the number of day use passes issued for the three state parks this year. We'll select the preferred approach for new fish viewing windows at Rocky Reach during the year, and we'll work with you to decide on a second camping pilot at BB Bridge Park in 2019, and this would include use of a reservation system.
John Stoll again, Commissioners. As I mentioned, this is the year we will conduct our customer satisfaction survey. So currently we are in the planning stages, partnering with communications. We anticipate hiring a contractor, and then in February having the survey being conducted. That would lead to a report to both management as well as the board by the end of this quarter. And then since we receive a lot of information, we get a lot of comments from the survey, we then take that information and we work through it to see if that will inform future business planning efforts.
Still on page two, about halfway down, we will work with the City of Wenatchee and the Land Trust to develop a comprehensive plan for recreational use of the Home Water Preserve. We will also work with the City of Chelan to permit a proposed 4-mile extension of the Reach 1 Trail.
Uh, John Stoll again. 1J1. This comes right on the heels of this morning. We wanted to start the customer load growth quarterly report. So you heard that from Andy and Chad. And you also had heard that we're putting a pretty strong emphasis on working more collaboratively with our partners, the county and the municipalities, and looking to improve that and move forward in Q2.
And at the bottom of page 2, Arundel River Park, make sure I'm on the right page, consistent with what we discussed earlier today, we'll implement an interim plan and support you in making long-term decisions. Also, Confluence Parkway, we will maintain the district position that a public input process and mitigation alternatives are necessary as we await the outcome of the federal grant application.
We are now on page 3 and shifting into objective 2, invest in creating long-term value. So I have the first two metrics that are associated with 2A is the electric service reliability index. That basically is our uptime. How often are the lights on? And we're seeking to a target greater than 99.98%. On the water system, we measure that by leaks, and our target is less than 30 leaks per 100 miles of distribution system.
I have objective 2C, the network system composite uptime. That measures the uptime in our core for all systems. It's set at 99.999 or 5.9s, which is the gold standard of the telecom networking world. I will also note that in 2017, we did achieve a metric of 100%, which is exceptional.
Objective 2D, hydro capability. You might notice that that's a new metric. We had hydro availability, which is all of our units together, what percent they're available to run. We think a more accurate metric is the capability, which is the overall percentage of our entire capacity of generation that's available to run. That metric is at 70, mid-70s. With the planned outages we have this year and the modernization work, we're working towards a high 80% by the time we get to 2021 on that metric.
Quick question for Mike before Greg. That 99.999, mm-hmm. and that's inclusive of wildfires?
That is inclusive of wildfires if it affects the core system.
That's a target. Wow. Yes.
I am not going to say that there's not a little bit of luck involved in making 100% on any given year.
Yeah.
So Greg Carrington talking about objective 2E. 2E is essentially associated with our energy efficiency program. Commissioner Smith, you asked the question, how much has conservation contributed overall to the district over the last 5 years during the previous presentation? And over the last 10 years, we have produced a savings of about 23 average megawatts for a 10-year period, just to give you an idea as to what we're doing. So this is this 1.7 is for the target for 2018. I thought it was a really good question because people forget that this accumulates over time. And right now, over the last 10 years, we're at about 23 average megawatts.
Thank you.
Item 2F is the LED streetlight program. You approved that at the last board meeting, and we're going to be implementing that in 2018.
I've got the next several here. This is associated with our modernization of the hydros items. Item 2G is our Rocky Reach efforts. We've got two things we're hoping to have in progress by the end of the one, to complete the bridge crane work by the end of the second quarter, and then our second large unit repair, the turbines at Rocky Reach, we hope to have the second unit on the floor ready to begin reassembly by the end of the year. Item 2H for Rock Island Powerhouse 1, we've got complete B6 modernization and have B7 underway by the end of the year, and then also to have begun three of the four units on B1 through 4, our oldest units in our entire fleet. Powerhouse 2, we've got a couple efforts. We've been underway of upgrading our governor controls and exciters and relays, and we actually have 7 of our 8 units complete, and we expect to complete the 8th unit by the end of the year. And then in our modernization efforts for Powerhouse 2, excuse me, we expect to have gone on the street and awarded a bid for Powerhouse 2 modernization. Asset management efforts, we're at the top of page 4 now. Item 2J, we've got asset management formalization and generation and transmission, and we're actually going to be completing training for our engineers and project managers for the information that the plants need for turnover. And then on the transmission side, basically defining critical asset systems and conducting priority rankings by the end of the year on the transmission system.
Commissioners, John Stoll again on 2L. We are putting a focus on the customer utilities asset management program. We have 4 goals we have out there. The first one is assess alignment between feeder hardening, capacity improvements, NESC, which is the National Electric Safety Code, and fiber build-out. So we anticipate partnering with Mike and his group, since you've seen through business planning that we put a lot of resources into that coordination. But as we move forward, we want to have a plan that addresses those 4 different goals to put them all into hopefully a more efficient and to maximize resources. The second one, as you've heard, we have a significant amount of substations that will be in being developed. So I would anticipate sometime over this year we will come forward with a bid advertising and potentially a bid acceptance for multiple transformers and large pieces of equipment. Shifting gears a little bit, as we look at our asset management strategies in water and wastewater, we have a couple things going on. We want to develop a water system control valve strategy that will help ensure that we are maintaining our system to the best of our ability. Up in the lake country at Lake Wenatchee, we want to do a survey of our step tanks. Those are the pressurized tanks that each customer has. That system's been in place for close to 30 years, and we want to go through and do a really thorough assessment of the condition to inform business planning and budgets in the future.
I have the next item, item 2M, the Fiber Asset Management Program Development and Implementation. In 2018, we're working through a series of tasks. The end result is to develop the hierarchies and have them input into Maximo by Q3. And when we talk about asset hierarchies, what we're really talking about is detailed definitions of the equipment, because I may have a large switch sitting in my network, but it is composed of a chassis and anywhere from 5 to 50 different cards. And so those assets within each asset have to be categorized, and all of the information associated with them, to include the expected life or the planned obsolescence input into that. As part of that, by the end of the 12-1, we will develop the key performance indicators and the metrics that will be used under our asset management program. The next item, the telecom asset management program, is lagging the fiber because we developed the tools, we developed the methodologies with fiber, and so the telecom asset will be in the governance process establishment and also implementing the asset class systems and hierarchies late in the year for that.
And excuse me, at the bottom of page 4, District Services 2 will begin implementing asset management this year, developing asset classes and standards. We will also advance the district strategies at state and federal levels, particularly carbon pricing and hydro licensing reform. The top of page 5 will execute a strategic relicensing plan for Rock Island that's environmentally and economically responsible and in the best interests of our customer owners.
Moving on to goal Q, advanced intelligent grid. We have three goals for this year. We anticipate developing a plan for a meter data management pilot as we move forward with the new customer information system. We're also looking at a development of the new functionality or improved functionality that we would anticipate with an automated metering infrastructure and develop that list. That will be very informative for the last goal, and that is to bring forward the request for proposal by the end of the year. Moving on to the next goal, that is develop and implement a strategy to expand the regional water supply and to seek regional operational and efficiencies among entities. The first goal, we continue to maintain a presence as one of the three partners on the Regional Water Committee, so we will continue to work through that group. You'll hear something later around the second source and where that stands, but that's a pretty key issue that they're working on. The second one is the conclusion of the regional efficiency study on both water and wastewater. There's been a consultant that's worked with us and the entities in the Upper Valley. We anticipate that being closed out and then any issues brought forward to the board by the end of this quarter. The next one is goal S, and that's develop and implement an NESC compliance program to include fiber build-out, make-ready, and third-party pole attachment process. You may recall last year we put the attachers on the year notice that kind of set the clock as we work through things such as rates. So we anticipate developing a rate proposal that will then lead into the outreach and negotiations with the various attachers on our poles. Another issue we're going to kick off this year is we're going to use a contractor to go out and do a complete field audit from a compliance standpoint from the NESC perspective. We anticipate that being a two-year effort, but we want to start it this year.
And we covered previously the relicensing plan for Rock Island. We're also going to secure FERC approval of a Rock Island project boundary adjustment for the Odabasham property. And as you know, that's formerly known as the Coyote Dunes Natural Area now.
Objective 2B, hardening our transmission system. This is to evaluate options for hardening the first couple miles of the Chelan-Manson line from the Chelan switchyard on up by the end of the third quarter.
Right below that, we'll implement the long-range facilities plan, concluding land negotiations with the Port District, designing and building at Rock Island and Rocky Reach, and initiating a master planning process for the headquarters site in collaboration with the Port District, the City of Wenatchee, and customer owner work group.
Nearing the bottom of page 5, 2X, execute distribution planning, siting, and construction program to address distribution system growth needs. Several goals. The first one is to reflect back on the recent efforts around siting substations and things of that nature. And we plan to present kind of the lessons learned, a path forward approach to the board by the end of Q2. Same time, we're looking at our work plan and identifying what our priorities are and then develop the strategy by the end of Q3. I've touched on this a little bit earlier, but we're also now into the construction, design and construction of the substation. So we have targets out there such as complete the OMI substation design by the end of the year. As I mentioned, contract for the major equipment for Leavenworth and Chelan, which I had mentioned, you will see that in the form of potentially a bid advertisement as well as acceptance. And then it looks like the mayor got out of here, but we want to work in the ENIAT area and complete a substation site for ENIAT, and he's got some ideas, and we want to work with that community and come to a conclusion by the end of the year.
I'm going to take the capital program, though, why, just for all of these. We're basically using the same goal that we've used for the last couple of years, that we'll complete 80% of the capital plans on schedule and within budget by the end of the calendar year.
And for 2Z, at the bottom of this page, we'll be influencing our future by working with External Affairs, WAPUTA, and other employers to influence legislation and regulations that can affect our future. Known opportunities for input in 2018 include rulemaking for the state family medical leave insurance law, and there are also several employment-related proposals already in committee review.
And, turning to the top of page 7, we will meet our hydro license requirements through fish spill and hatchery production targets and funding tributary work as part of our no net impact commitment.
And item 3A4 there is also operate our hydro facilities within the permits that we have under the Endangered Species Act through the end of the year.
So the next goal is complete the dry and wastewater capital improvements per the schedule agreed with ecology. Informally, we've had some discussions with ecology that based on the nature of that system, we have some time to work through what would be a cost-effective solution, but we want to formalize that over this next year so we have certainty of what that schedule looks like.
And still on page 7, we have a number of things under our environmental obligations as good stewards of the natural resources that we plan to do. We'll be ensuring fish programs at Rocky Reach and Rock Island are compliant with state and federal requirements. We'll be meeting ecology expectations for permitting the Dryden Acclimation Facility. We'll be implementing the schedule for 10-year HCP survival studies that are planned at Rock Island and Rocky Reach. At the same time, ensuring the powerhouse upgrade work doesn't interfere with that schedule. We'll be documenting work with EPA Ecology in preparation for the 2019 Chelan River check-in. We'll be completing the water rights compliance investigations, decommissioning the Eniat Canal, and assessing long-term impacts of climate change on district operations.
Goal 3J, execute on the Peshawson Wastewater Capital Improvement Plan per the ecology-approved plan. One caveat around there, the funding is yet to come through. We anticipate a substantial amount of grant funding, but with last year's session, that was not formally approved. So if that is approved in this session, that would then trigger a certain events, such as advertising for that project. We would have that completed by the end of Q2, and then have a construction schedule developed and meeting that timeline and milestones.
Next up is objective 4, ensure financial stability. And I think we're on a good time track to complete this one before the lunch break. Starting off on this objective are our district-wide financial metrics, which continue and have the added days cash on hand metric, which was a new metric added in 2017. Also to note is our debt leverage metric is forecasted to reach that just less than 35% level by the end of the year, and that is being accomplished with just planned debt retirements that are scheduled retirements, no advanced principal payments for 2018.
I'm going to be covering item G, which is actively participate in electric market development. There are several things that are happening on the West Coast. The energy imbalance market you hear about, our EIM, is occurring throughout the West Coast. We are also taking a look at solar projects. There is an overabundance of solar being developed in California and throughout the West. We're trying to figure out how hydro fits into that. The third one on the list is to look at RFPs, requests for proposals for frequency response products. I don't know if you know this, but we already provide frequency response to Cal ISO. We got awarded the contract for that. And then we continue to participate in new products and services as they develop throughout Q4.
I've got the Columbia River Treaty, so pretty much the same goals as the past in terms of trying to get the termination notice issued. We have dropped the initiate negotiations because the government has announced that it will be initiating negotiations this year. The last one is a new one, and that is to better define an alternative to a negotiated agreement. We're now more than 3 years since the opportunity to advance the notice of termination, and it still has not happened, and it's time for us to begin thinking about what happens if there isn't a negotiated agreement between the U.S. and Canada. What options do we have available to us?
Okay, so moving on to objective 4I, stabilize and enhance wholesale electric revenues. These are the same as previous years. We have a goal of meeting our minimum revenue requirements through wholesale revenues through Q4. So we'll be adding in, you know, the fifth year in 2018 and looking to stabilize the revenues out in the fifth year and then staying within our hedging limits through Q4.
So starting on the top of page 10, objective 4J, is focusing on the Alcoa contract this year, with the next decision point being after the, or being with the one-year delay for the Wenatchee Works expiring in mid-June. We will start by conducting some customer outreach to ensure that we understand the community's perspective at the beginning of this process, so that as we go through any decision-making, we would already be informed with community perspectives and concerns. And our goal is to complete any work with Alcoa that will be needed by the end of Q2 and the expiration of that one-year delay. Next is maintaining our really strong AA bond ratings, which is even more important this year and for the next few years as we see the potential for new debt in our planning horizon. Next goal is L, of receiving clean audit opinions with no material deficiencies, which is of highest priority for us every year. Goal M is the continuous improvement of the business planning cycle, in which the board will see about the October timeframe on, where we will bring updated 5-year plans to the board in October, and then continue through that with updating our plan of finance based on those plans, and ultimately the 2019 budget approval by the beginning of December. And then goal N is an extension of some of the 2017 planning work that we have been doing with the board through financial policies, financial metrics, debt philosophies, and we will continue into 2018 focusing on the retail electric revenue planning. Item one under this one is something that began in 2017 that will continue, and that's the testing phase of the integrated electric, one more level detail of metrics. As you heard Chad describe about learning more about the details around our electric system, these will help us learn more about the details of how they relate to revenues, and we will learn and discuss on those through the remainder of the year. And then John will keep this one going on the deeper dive into more of the details.
Thanks, Kelly. Yeah, you heard this morning, as Chad and Andy had mentioned, about even with just the HDL, the need to look at a lot of our policies, our revenue recovery. So we anticipate an iterative process throughout the year, but ultimately by year end, bringing forward a rate proposal, regs, and policies and whatnot.
All right, ready to keep going? Okay, we're on objective 4.0. This is the implementation of hourly coordination and independent operations. Just for your information, this project represents about 10,000 hours worth of work in order to implement that. There's four major phases associated with it. It's updating our energy management system. It's developing, number two, a hydraulic model for independent operations, which is item two. Item three is updating our energy accounting system. And item four is the overall project management associated with that and the integration of all of those systems and integration with all of our power purchasers as well. Moving on to item P, execute a 5-year slice hedge. This has been pushed back from the normal Q1 to Q4, where the reason we did that is because we wanted to make sure that it was in sync with the independent operations. So we're, by the end of the year, we'll have a pretty good idea as to where we're headed with that, and we'll be able to implement the slice program based on that. The next one is implement a longer-term strategic marketing plan. There will be a resolution coming to you for us to be able to implement longer-term slice program. Item two is to develop and design long-term strategies and bring that to the board by Q4, and then set up guidelines associated with the new large loads. As you all know, this morning you heard about how those large loads are going to impact our retail and our distribution system. But the large loads will also impact transmission. They will also impact our hedging program as well. So we all of us need to get together and talk about how that is going to affect that.
Next one up is the carbon strategic goals related to integrated resource planning and carbon planning. Recall that working with Public Generating Pool, we got a study that looked at the least cost approach to greenhouse gas emissions in the electric sector for the Northwest.
Revenue portfolio, in particular, we call out being able to sell the environmental attributes associated with that portfolio and also develop capacity in carbon. Item T is to develop a large retail customer development plan. You're already aware that we're teaming with the port to conduct an infrastructure study, and we expect that we'll be done with that by Q4 of this coming year. Based on the outcome of the strategy that we developed up in item Q3, we're going to develop the strategy and to identify and to recruit and attract companies that may come into Chelan County and make sure that we're on top of who it is that's coming into Chelan County and being able to determine, you know, kind of like how we want to proceed. And if we do that, we're not going to be doing it alone. So item three on here is to develop a stakeholder engagement plan to do that with the ports, the cities, the towns, and the county.
So we've managed to get about 60% of the way through this, I think, and I think this is a good opportunity for a break. And come back to it later this afternoon.
And as I understand, we'll come back to a hearing at 1 o'clock. Yes. And then do you want to take up the remaining part of this?
I think we'd like to get the resolutions done because we'll have staff here. So we just
and then,
get
so then following the resolutions, we'll come back to this.
Yes.
Okay. That being said, we'll adjourn for lunch. Be back at 1 o'clock for a hearing on streetlight rate setting. Thank you. Good afternoon, and welcome to the January 8th, 2018 meeting of the Chelan County PUD Board. And we are at the point in our agenda where we have a public hearing on LED streetlight rate. And Andrew Gazelle.
Hang on just one second.
I skipped the general manager.
Actually, that was our fault. We encouraged you to get started, and we didn't have Commissioner Arsenault on yet. So we're just reconnecting him.
Gary, let me know when you're there.
I think she's still trying to open the line.
Well.
Hello.
Gary, welcome. So we're on board, ready to go?
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, we're starting with the public hearing, LED streetlight rate. And let me do this differently. Steve Wright, general manager.
Yes, we now finished the round of public meetings, and Andrew Gazelle will report on that. And we also have a resolution for your action today.
Thank you. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Andrew Gazelle, manager of Energy Efficiency Department here at the PUD. And as Steve mentioned, this is a public hearing for the setting of the LED streetlight rates. If you recall, back in November 20th, I provided the board with a presentation summarizing the work that had been accomplished to date, a description of the interaction of rate action with the grant funding, and a proposed LED streetlight rate for Schedule 7, 8, 9, and 10. Additionally, proposed dates were provided for public hearings. These were on December 4th, the board accepted those proposed dates. The public meetings were held in Leavenworth, Chelan, and Wenatchee on December 11th, 12th, and the 20th, respectively. No members of the public attended the meeting. In addition to the public meetings listed above, the LED streetlight project team has been in contact with the cities in Chelan County over the past year, keeping them informed of project status, seeking their input on project specifics, and ensuring they are supportive of the project. They have been helpful and supportive. That's the report on the rate. I have a resolution for your consideration as well. And Exhibit A of the resolution lists the proposed rates. Is that good?
Let's see. That's resolution number 10.
It is.
Yes. Sorry, resolution 10.
Commissioners, what are your thoughts?
Seeing no member of the public here to jump up and say yes or no. I think I would be hard-pressed to imagine anybody protesting a rate reduction. So I would move the approval of resolution number 10.
Second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded to accept resolution 10 as presented. Any other discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of resolution 10 as presented signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Aye. Yes.
Yes. See what happens when you get a new president, things just go off the rails. Opposed? No. Measure passes unanimously. Number 11.
Okay. We're going to bring up agenda item 11. Well, we've changed the numbering. I'm sorry. Let's see if I've got it right now.
Do we want to do consent first?
Correct. Consent agenda? Commissioners?
Move to approve the consent agenda as is.
Okay. Second?
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda as presented. Any further discussion? Those commissioners, and we'll get the language right, in favor of it, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion is carried.
You know, yes works also.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It does. Yeah. Yeah. I was just trying to follow your
example. I listened to you. I said yes.
Yeah, I know. And I, but I'm just trying to follow your example, Randy, and it's big shoes.
He was always the teacher's pet, I'll bet you.
Oh, I recognized it right now.
And I wasn't.
It is, I've seen it before. So we are at 11, correct?
Or yes.
Mm-hmm. So we want to finish it and then we'll
come back to the 11 is a resolution authorizing amendment number 4 to services agreement SA number 16-099 with Anchorage UEA LLC to provide permitting assistance. I just want to identify for the commission, we did make a mistake on this one, and you're seeing the entire management team here because we're working to make sure that we don't make a mistake like this one again. Relatively small amount relative to the contract, but still one we don't want to make. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the team. I believe, Jeff, will you be starting?
Yes, I will start.
Well, that's an easy thing. Two out of three are Jeff. So. How fortunate is that?
Jeff Osborne, licensed compliance supervisor. So before you, we have the resolution. As described, to add $20,000 to the Anchor QEA permitting contract, $10,000 to cover expenditures that exceeded the not-to-exceed amount, and then an additional $10,000 to cover any potential emergency permitting activities that may arise between today and the time that we have to execute a new contract for 2018. I anticipate you may have a question such as, how did this happen? And so the very short answer is, I didn't pay attention to the contract sufficiently well to determine that there was too much year left at the end of the funding and act swiftly enough to put corrective actions in place to ensure that we did not exceed the contractual amount. So that's the short, sweet answer. So the lessons learned from this action was obviously for me to be more diligent in my contract management as well as timely in recognizing that there is an issue and taking corrective actions. Another aspect would be in invoices that come across my desk, in addition to having the invoice amount and background material for that particular invoice, to also include have the contractor include a budget remaining so it's very clear how much is left on that particular contract. We also have some other thoughts on some institutional controls. Jeff, do you want to speak to those?
Good afternoon, Commissioner. Jeff Smith, Managing Director of District Services. And we want you to know that we take overages like this very seriously. We do expect our contract leads and our project managers to track the costs and remain within authorized spending levels. Maximo does kick out automated messages warning that a percentage of the allocated budget has been expended, and those are useful as long as you pay attention to them and heed them. There's a new bid workflow system you've heard us talk about that is being implemented in PCS And we are installing that this year, which will provide automatic controls and reporting tools that will be very useful. In the meantime, we're developing a manual tracking system that will monitor contract expenditures and be kept current by dedicated staff. But that's just a short-term fix until we have the electronic version in place. Happy to answer any questions. Michelle, anything to add?
No, you covered that.
Okay.
Commissioners, Ann?
I'm not worried about the $10,000 overage or however you want to put that, but thanks for your explanation. But this still just gets me. That's a huge, in a two-year period of time, that's a, what is that, a 700% increase? I guess you explained that the last time in May when we voted to approve this, but it still just kills me.
The number of projects that are being managed actively at this point in time are in the vicinity of 50 to 60 individual projects. We're experiencing billing rates of in the vicinity of $30,000 a month with the existing billing rate. For perspective, again, the 60 projects that are currently being managed in 2014 and 15, we had 25 for both years combined. Okay, so we've had a number of increase in the project managers to be able to handle more projects, and so we're working very hard at trying to provide the permitting service, if you will, for those project managers in order to get their projects completed. We've also, another probably the most significant component of this is we've hired the environmental permit coordinator, Edry Risden, and she's outstanding. And so she will be taking a tremendous load from Anchor QEA. We'll have our in-house expertise, much of which we have not had prior to her being here. She's very, very good.
What's her first name?
Edry.
She's here.
Is she here? She's
here. She's going to be introduced by Jeff Smith shortly.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
Nice to have an
But I was going to say on a scale of 1 to 10, she's an 11. So that will be obviously a reduction. There will be a transition period between now and when she gets going, but she is going full bore. So there will be a probably a significant reduction in the need for environmental contracting as we go forward.
Perfect.
Okay. Yeah, I was just going to remind the board that during this period of time, we have not had a permitting coordinator. And this contractor came in and took what was a program in disarray and really shaped it and long-term put it together. But now that we've dumped all the responsibility on Edry, I should introduce her. And Vicki Griffin, who is the real estate and permitting manager, has that introduction.
Please come on up and use the microphone. Thank you.
Thank you. So last year on December 11th, we hired Edry Risden to fill the permit coordinator position. She comes to us from Grant County PUD. She worked there for 10 years in the permitting department. She also worked on the relicensing team, so she has a huge load of knowledge about utilities in general and permitting specifically. She's already met with a good many of our project managers and helping to navigate new permits that are already coming in for her, as well as transitioning some of the existing permits into her management. And we'll continue to do that as it makes sense to do that. Some of these projects Anchor has had out there for a long time. They're very complex projects, and it doesn't make sense for us to try and take over those projects at this particular point in time. But we'll continue to monitor that, and as we can, we'll take over those permit projects and put them back in our folder, if you will. Mm-hmm. We don't expect to eliminate the need for Anchor. There are certain things that they have an expertise at that we don't, and so we'll continue to use them as we need to help Edry do her job correctly and appropriately. And we just look forward to better being able to serve district's needs in this particular area, and we're super excited about Edry. She is, he didn't overstate it, and she doesn't like to hear that, but it's true. So.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. And at some risk of being misunderstood, I'm thinking Grant County, if you worked there for 10 years, must have violated child labor laws to employ you. But thank you very much. Appreciate you being here. Yeah. Comments from commissioners?
So, commissioners, if I might, I would add one comment and say that as chief compliance officer, we've had a particular emphasis in the last couple of years on meeting all of our permitting obligations and improving that program. And Jeff's comment about taking the program from disarray and moving it into an organized program is probably understated, candidly. And through that effort, Jeff has been leading. We've actually met with the county, for example, in the permitting department there, and we've had improved relations in an effort to meet all of our obligations. And actually, I just want to say that I think one of the most exciting pieces that comes out of it is that for probably the first time in my experience with the district, all permitting activities will be under one point of contact. So we've often referred to permitting at the district as environmental permitting. I'm forgetting that there are other county, state, municipal permits that are required as well. So I'm really excited about it and think that Jeff and his team have done a really good job in putting that program together.
Well, thank you for that. I didn't know. I didn't know any of this. So I'm glad I asked the question because now we all know what's really gone on and what it entails. I was thinking just permitting one small piece of the whole. Well, it's not small. It's never small. But so thank you. I have a much bigger picture now.
Yeah,
good question.
Yeah, never small and always aggravating. So, other comments, thoughts? I guess to Jeff and Jeff, I'm not as concerned ever that a mistake has occurred. I'm always concerned about how staff handle it when it happens. And I can't say enough for the integrity that you have in the program. Thank you. Really appreciate it. With that, entertain a motion.
I would move approval of Resolution 11.
God, you're having fun today, aren't you?
Yeah.
I'll second the motion.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to approve Resolution 11 as presented. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
No. Motion is carried. So we're at, you want to go back to the performance?
I would like to go back to part two of the district performance plan. Okay. So we finished page 11, so we're now on page 12, objective number 5. And Kirk, I think you may be up first here.
Mike is coming.
I'm going to take all the operational metrics. So objective 5, A through F, which are the operational metrics and targets for the business units. I would say up front that we're using the same methodology that we used in 2017. The numbers have been updated for 2018. They were updated based on the approved O&M budget and production forecast. And they're cumulative for the year. So at the end of the year, the targets come out to be $19.25 for the hydro cost per normalized megawatt hour. Fiber cost per active connection, $440. The distribution O&M cost per normalized kilowatt hours, less than 3.33 cents. The fully loaded electric cost per normalized kilowatt hour, less than 6.34 cents. Wastewater O&M cost per ERU is less than $1,033. And the water O&M cost per 1,000 gallons, less than $5.78.
Commissioners, question about that? So Eric Walkless, General Counsel. I'm on 5G, implementing the GRC solution within project milestones and budget. I have to say this is a lessons learned moment for me. When I went on vacation, I had one line as a milestone. And when I got back, Kelly and Steve had added two more lines as milestones for that. So
a whole joke about the Kremlin.
Kelly was
never
smiling
go on vacation.
This morning.
So commissioners, this represents a shift from the procurement of the proposed governance risk compliance solution to the implementation of that system on the project timeline that has been developed by the team and is reflected here as the two primary milestones. You might recall this was a project procurement that was authorized by the board back in first meeting of December, and now we're simply shifting in 18 to the implementation of that program.
Next on goal H is advancing our business continuity plans, and I'm going to cover this one for everyone. each year we try to advance one more item out of our plan, and you see that goal in H1, where our focus for 2018 will be to conduct an enterprise-wide business continuity mock test. We've been concentrating on individual business units, so for this year we'll be focusing on something across the enterprise. And then in addition to that, each business unit will also do their annual review and update of their individual business unit plans and any specialized mock tests that are needed. So this takes us all the way through H10 into the middle of age 13. And the next goal is to advance our data analytics and business intelligence capabilities. So we've been calling our focus in this area business intelligence, our BI. The industry is evolving to bigger things than just BI. So you'll start hearing us use the term data analytics more than just business intelligence. And it's just a bigger umbrella under which you take information, try to learn from it, and make decisions with it. Our primary goal, first off, for this area is I1, which is to fill our three open positions we have in this area, and that will allow us to advance our capabilities. Until that time, we'll maintain our current abilities until we fill those open positions. And then also of note on this one is number 8, and it's our hydro energy research, implementing a data analytics platform. So this is one that is a little bit familiar maybe to you just from last board meeting where there was the board resolution for SAPIR. This is one of the tasks that they're helping us with of getting the data analytics platform in place. And it is an outcome of a public power benefit, part of the Hydro Research Institute, of one of those kind of R&D efforts. Here's one that's being put in place into day-to-day operations to help us with our predictive analytics. And the goal is to complete the testing of that by the end of the year.
So, Kelly, what type of skill set those three positions going to require?
One of them is really focused in on the data warehouse technical abilities. One is on analyzing the data, so data analytics, extracting big data and making sense out of it. And then the third one is managing that overarching umbrella of data analytics across the organization. So that's the ability to take that a team of people that don't necessarily report to you and gain success out of it. So three very different skill sets. They are all backfill positions of current open positions where we have modified with Mark O'Brien taking on the CIS project manager role. We've modified the roles of how we're backfilling those open positions, and two of them were currently open, to ensure that as we advance to the future, we gain these skills in-house so we're able to continue to advance in this arena. That's a really fast-moving and skill that's in demand.
So all three of those probably would require some level of engineering knowledge at some level.
Each one will be a little bit different, so not necessarily engineering as much as the data analytics. Okay. Spotting patterns is one of the items there where you don't have to necessarily know your the technicality behind it, but the ability to take information and spot patterns is the skill set that the data analytics specifically is looking for. So it's a broad array of background that could help in this arena. So the next goal is 5J, and it's improving our project attribute valuations and capital review process. So this is another item that's a continuous improvement of our techniques each year. It helps us prioritize projects across the district, not just priorities within a business unit. And so we keep trying to improve our methods of which we do that. And how the board sees the outcome of this one is what we end up putting as the top priorities in our district-wide budgeting and our individual business unit business planning. So next up from that, I'm going to turn it over to Lorna.
And good afternoon. Item number 5K is to conduct collective bargaining agreement negotiations and ensure its smooth implementation in order to address current needs and future needs for administrative ease and financial sustainability.
Commissioner Jeff Smith, at the top of page 14, we will implement a new bid workflow system for procurement and contract services, which we discussed a few moments ago. This will address the current difficulty we have in moving projects from initiation to execution. We will also be improving our physical asset protections with an upgrade of the district's closed-circuit camera and video system, physical access control improvements, and enhancements to our low-impact physical security, all of this driven by compliance requirements.
Item 5M, this is to work with our reliability standards. NERC is actually formulating a standards review group across the industry. A lot has happened since 2005 Energy Policy Act, and we're going to participate mainly through the use of a contractor in looking at where there's opportunities for efficiency gains in the reliability standards effort.
John, we're up to you. Jeff, cover that next one.
Commissioners, John Stoll, this next one, maintain and update utility service policies, is similar to the electric revenue goal that I talked about earlier. For instance, the first goal we have is to confirm or redefine the growth pays for growth as we look at future substations, potential system impact fees. That iterative process that I talked about, you have to understand the trade-offs as you work through those approaches. We also want to take a look at the high-density load rate and the policies. It's been 2 years, essentially, since that's been crafted, and we want to take a look at that, given what we've learned by the end of Q3. We do the annual fees and charges as part of the budget presentation, as well as implementing year four of the five-year water wastewater rate increase plan this April.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but on annual fees and charges, that's pretty much a staff decision, does not come to the board, correct?
Correct. It's been delegated to the general manager with the requirement that we do an informative overview.
Thank you.
I can get a microphone. Our objective 5P, executing the district telecommunication system improvement plans. We finished the PBX in 2017. In 2018, we will finish the microwave system with a project completion date in the fourth quarter. At the same time, we will be moving on the land mobile replacement, the trunked radio. And the infrastructure on that project will be in place by the end of Q4, final implementation in 2019. And in combination with that, since we're replacing all of the major assets, telecom assets, we're updating the system disaster recovery plan. We're going through a feasibility process as the new equipment is put in place. All of that is put into a draft plan, which will be reviewed, and then a final recommendation on that disaster recovery plan will occur in Q4 of 2018.
The next one is upgrading the customer information system. We anticipate coming forward over the next month or so a project or a contract to be approved, as well as the trued up budget revision as we know more about the cost of this project in order to authorize it and move forward. Once finalized, we would anticipate the project moving forward, and then our goal is to maintain the project schedule and milestones through 2018.
The next one, I'm going to actually handle RS&T. For a number of us, this is our cybersecurity efforts. This year, we plan to perform a cyber governance assessment with the National Renewable Energy Laboratory. And we're actually doing that in part this week. the telecom network as well as the control system network are going to be performing that assessment this week, and the business network, the IT side, will perform that next month. It's scheduled for one of the things we want to do is once we get that assessment done, identify where the gaps are and what we need to do to close the gaps. In addition, we're going to be looking at conducting a vulnerability assessment at some point this year through the help of an outside party, and then continuing our training efforts because employees are paramount and critical for our cybersecurity efforts.
And then we'll be developing and implementing a human performance culture of excellence district-wide. We'll be continuing that effort for safety and operational excellence. And we onboarded customer utilities and fiber and telecommunications ahead of schedule last year. So we will continue moving those groups forward. And we're also going to bring the board along, having a champion and determining how the principles will apply to the board processes. And we also have district services coming on in 2018, a little earlier than originally expected. So we're moving this along very quickly.
Pause on that note that we will be looking for an individual from the board to be a champion for this effort in terms of how it applies to board processes. So just give that some thought. Don't need an answer today.
Goal 5B is our implementing our mobile computing strategy. And this enables us to complete work efficiently beyond the workstation. And it's the focus for 2018, starting with getting the infrastructure in place that we need to be able to do secure remote access. And that's all the foundational items you see in 1 through 3. And then turning to page 16, implementing some of the items that we have includes an area of focus for the board, which is the paperless boardroom. And so that is one of the items after we get the appropriate infrastructure in place that we'll be expanding. And Commissioner McKenna is the lead point of contact on this one for the board. And then next up, Lorna is going to do most of the items from here.
So the last item in Objective 5 is to ensure that we are preparing for the future of the workplace by identifying high-priority HR issues so other business units can begin to make plans for 2019 with that knowledge available to them. And turning the page to page 17 on Objective 6, in A, we have supporting managers' performance goals for succession planning efforts and preparing for the future by supporting their succession planning efforts. Got a number of items under that. We're continuing on with those. B is looking at our selection processes so that we will hire for the abilities that are going to be needed in the future, defining skill sets and figuring out how to select for those. C is meeting current needs for sustainable and effective health care and compensation strategies. In particular, we're thinking about some of our compression issues. In D, we're implementing new leadership academy, preparing for the future through leadership development. We'll be continuing and expanding on that NIOSH pilot that we talked about a few weeks ago. Also developing some other content to help supervisors and leaders. In E, we're going to develop some integrated talent management strategies. Again, we're investing in the future by identifying our overall talent management philosophy, and then we want to bring all of the strategies for all of our HR functions into alignment with that philosophy. And then I'm going to skip over F for a moment and go to G, which is meeting current needs by ensuring business units hire the talent they need. That goal is the same as last year. Jeff, did you want me to talk about the contractor safety program?
So we're on page 18. We plan to expand the contractor safety program by establishing expectations, roles, and responsibilities. for project managers and construction managers who supervise contract labor. Something that we started with a couple of years ago, and it's gradually evolving as time goes on.
And then turning the page now to page 19. The safety metrics are the same as in 2017, except that item number 4, which is the response time within 45 days, has been increased from 75% up to 80%. B, and the required safety training is the same as last year. In C and D, we're going to create some new targets. Some new metrics without creating targets or metrics for both recruiting and for our safety, close calls and safety concerns, so that we can get a sense of how we're doing compared to some of the things that we think are important, such as diversity and again, identifying and addressing safety stuff. In E, which is developing the annual affirmative action plan, this is something we do annually and report to you on. And in F, our safety programs are, we just want to get some expert consultant to help us to ensure that our safety programs are as robust as they need to be to meet all of the regulatory requirements.
And the last one is mine. With respect to, we always want a recognition-rich culture, and we created a program about 2 years ago where we, on a monthly basis, have employees nominate for individuals who have shown great examples of the cycle of personal ownership or our values. And we have been giving out a monthly winner award to that, and we will continue that in 2018. We did a recognition survey here this year, and that was one of the things that was identified by employees as something that they appreciated and liked.
Have any of those ever been presented at a board meeting?
We have not. We've presented them at senior management team, and we do them at the monthly general manager forum, but we haven't done them here. Are you interested in doing them here?
Yeah.
Okay. So we can certainly provide that option. I will tell you that there are...
If you think that'd be an adder rather than a detractor.
Well, I'm not sure. The reason we have different reactions, we have some folks who don't, who find it more difficult to be recognized in public. And so we actually give people choices as to how they would like to be recognized and how much.
Yeah, I don't think the board, and I'm speaking for the board, and I don't have the right to, but I think of a person is uncomfortable with being here. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be a force mark.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So we might create another option where that's a place where they could be recognized if they want to be.
But we've been discussing opt-in and opt-out. Yeah. But not today.
So I'd like to wrap up with a couple of thoughts. I meant to say this at the beginning. So we have 7 objectives, and if you recall, the 7 objectives actually tie back to our ballot scorecard. So our first 3 objectives were all about how do we provide customer owner satisfaction. Our 4th one was the financial line in the ballot scorecard. Our 5th one was about practicing effective management skills, and 6 and 7 were about the people and culture. So we used ballot scorecard, developed 7 objectives. Now we translate the 7 objectives into specific performance items for the year. Also recall that what we do, this is the only time when we go through every item in the plan. So from here on out, what we do is report by exception. So if something is red or yellow or blue, so red or yellow being that we're worried that we won't be able to achieve the objective for the year, blue being it's completed, so we actually got it done. So at this point going forward, we'll just be coming back and tell you about things that in one of those 3 categories. Any thoughts or feedback for us?
It's impressive. Really comprehensive. Yeah, it's amazing. Great work.
Yeah, I don't see a lot of slack time in here.
Right. If there had been more vacation, there'd been more metrics.
Only for you. Only
stay
for you.
Stay home, Eric. Stay home.
Mr. Walquist.
Have the objectives changed much over the last few couple years?
No, we adopted them as part of the strategic plan. So we kept them the same. They will get revisited as part of the next strategic plan.
So I just wanted to make a kind of a summary just a thought, because I agree with Ann. This is very impressive. When you've looked at, Jim Collins, who wrote the book Good to Great, did a lot of research, and they've gone in and they've studied good organizations that have moved to great organizations. What makes that difference? And these organizations really moved from the old mission, vision, which we have values, that type of thing, to a very nimble organization that really has clarity around mission. What is your mission? What's your vision? And what strikes me is that There's real clarity here of the vision of the organization, the work that's being done, the goals that are being set, the commitments that are being made. And it just strikes me as a good example of a good to great organization, that that there's real clarity on what the vision is of how you're going to accomplish over the next couple of years. How you're going to reach your, continuous improvement, reaching towards that mission statement, that purpose. What is our purpose, and what's the vision of how we're going to accomplish it? So, this gets me pretty excited, and I think you've done an excellent job. And it's very clear, and I don't think there's anybody that, from outside of the organization or inside of the organization, that if you ever ask, well, where are you going as an organization? This is very clear. This is, by dates and the commitments that are being made and the goals that are being set, it's really clear. So I think it's very, very nice, very nicely done.
So Steve, not knowing how many people out there have read Good to Great, I'm one that's read it more than once. Who in this group do you think are the hedgehogs?
Yeah. I forgot about that.
I don't know how many of you have read Good to Great. None of you? It's
Lorna has.
So we've got a few hedgehogs out here, people that stick their nose to the grindstone and just get the job done and just focus. So we've got a good team here. We've got a really good team.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think just another way of putting it, and again, very appreciative of this. It's kind of the idea that if you don't know where you're going, you're going to end up somewhere else. And more eloquently, I guess, phrased by Sir Robert Bacon, and I'm paraphrasing because I'm not that eloquent, is that, things will change spontaneously, and you have much less control over planned and unplanned results. But if you do it intentionally, and as a plan going forward, you significantly reduce the risk of unplanned events that take your organization or whatever it is you're researching or doing off course. There's just philosophically and practically so many things that support this process. And I'm just grateful that it's been developed and that it's in play, and it reflects, on the 7 objectives that you just talked about. And those 7 objectives have really come to us very clearly from the people that we serve. I just like the full circle. So, again, a lot of work, a lot of effort. When your name's beside it, it's got some ownership, and it's not that anybody's head hunting, but you feel that ownership and you take it serious. So, Steve, I guess to you and the senior management team and everyone who's worked diligently to bring this forward, it's a very satisfying piece. And thank you very much.
Well, thank you for the feedback. And you probably also have a sense as to why, when we had that discussion about HDL and the possibility of hundreds of megawatts of load, how it could completely blow up a document like that. And why I think it's important to have a document like this, so we can describe for the community the trade-offs that are out there if we were to take on some of that other work, and what some of the losses would be in terms of the things that don't get accomplished if we take that on. So.
Yeah, I think that's specifically an example of what Robert Bacon was talking about. But, you know, you don't have a plan. Thank you. Any other thoughts at this point? Okay, manager items.
I'd like to start with Suzanne Hartman. She's got a couple of things she wanted to bring to our attention.
You're going to be sorry.
Yep. There's a conspiracy afloat.
Today is a very special day.
Well, for somebody.
For somebody.
Nobody I know.
And I will avoid singing, but if others would like to chime in, feel free.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Steve. Happy birthday to you.
My job is now on the line.
That's right.
The record reflects that I did not sing.
And he's turning red.
Yeah, you know how to embarrass me. That's
well, that's
true.
Good.
And then also the fire chief warned me that I could not have the number of appropriate candles. So here's what we came up with. So that'll have to do. But at some point,
it's good to only be 6 years old.
Six. And the nice thing about waiting towards the end of the meeting is that there, you don't have to share as much cake. There you go.
And the card does need to be open.
It does.
Oh, now I'm not behind that. Come on. That's your duty.
Did I rat you out?
No, you didn't. Okay. Mr. President.
Come on.
Oh, my God. It's a good thing we're only on radio. I think I'm going to need to pass this one around.
Yeah. Have to maintain a sense of humor.
Yeah, it's important.
Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Well, happy birthday. Yes. So I just kind of my own comments on the 321 projects you just saw before you, 144 P1, 161 P2, 16 stretch, most if not all of them will require some form of communication assistance, I'm sure. And I just thought I'd let you know I'm going on sabbatical. So moving right along. Two things that I'd like to bring to your attention. Number one, we have the opportunity and we are a sponsor, co-sponsor of the Multicultural Festival that's occurring this Saturday, January 13th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Wenatchee Valley Museum. And it's going to be bringing together 25 different cultural groups and lots of food, lots of entertainment, lots of cultural experience. And I hope that some of you will have an opportunity to join between 10 and 3 p.m. Sorry, I think I said 4. 10 and 3, 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. on Saturday at the museum. The second one that I'd like to bring to your attention is next week on January 16th, I believe that's a Wednesday night at 7 p.m., again at the museum. They sponsor a series, an environmental series, and we are sponsoring the one on the 16th called Switch, and it's kind of an interesting look at how power gets generated and how it's going to, what the future looks like, and it looks at all aspects of power generation. And it's quite provocative and quite intriguing, and again, something that might be of interest to all of you and to our those listening in and to our customer owners. And that's 7 p.m., January 16th, which I believe is a Wednesday. And it's free. And for those who are attending, they'll get an LED light from courtesy of their public utility. And but there is a request for a $5 donation to attend just to support the museum. So those are the two items I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to invite Ron Slabob to talk about the regional water second source.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Ron Slabob, Water Wastewater Manager. Provided an update late last year, I believe it was in October, on regional water. And at that time, regional just completed testing or pump testing a well that had been drilled out there to evaluate the capacity of that aquifer. It was pretty dismal, only 300 gallons per minute. And I indicated that there was some additional hydrogeologic analysis being completed to further understand that capacity and whether or not that source adjacent to Rock Island Dam would be viable or not. And bad news, it's not. There just is not enough water there. So we looked around, dusted off the study that was completed, I think, in 2014 or 15, high level, looking at several different sites on both sides of the Columbia River. And we really want to further evaluate that area down there. There's a better water quality than any other sites, and still the potential for quantity. Now, the PUD property extends all the way up to Alcoa along the Chelan County side. And just looking at the ground, there's some areas that could be viable for a regional source about a quarter to a half mile, up to three quarters of a mile down from Alcoa. Alcoa has very productive wells. They drilled two 16-inch wells back in the early 50s. They're located right in the middle of their facility. And from what I understand, they produce upwards to 1,000 gallons per minute with minimal drawdowns. So there's the potential that there's some good water-bearing materials in the ground up there.
Where was that, Ron? I'm sorry, I missed it.
Chelan County side, PUD property, just downriver from Alcoa. So from the center of the Alcoa facility, you're looking at around as close as a quarter, just further away to, say, three quarters of a mile down from Alcoa. That's all the activity thus far. Regional is working on getting a contract together with RH2 Engineering. Going to take a slightly different approach than what we did on the 10-inch test well by Rock Island Dam, and go drill three smaller wells spaced out a little bit further so we can cover more ground. Won't be able to pump as much, but we'll give a pretty good idea of whether there's water-bearing materials down there or not. So more to come on that later this year. Questions?
Thanks for the update.
Sure.
Yep. Questions that can wait and need to probably, so I'll just wait.
Okay.
Thanks.
Do you want me to cover Alala Canyon too?
Yeah, that would be good, please.
Okay. Has folks heard about what's happening with Alala? Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. In 2015, we had an extraordinary event, the Sleepy Hollow fires. In 2016, we dealt with Whispering Ridge groundwater, ground movement areas. And 2017, we got a break. And in 2018, first day back to work on Tuesday, I got a call from our foreman. He had responded to Alala Canyon with a pump alarm. And he said, there's no water coming from the spring. So Alala Canyon, I remember it because I started work here in 2002, and it's a project that was just finishing up about the time that I started work. There's a spring, according to our water right, it dates back almost as far as I do, to the early 70s. And so that water right's coming up on 50 years old, and it was 0.12 CFS, which is just over 50 gallons per minute. And that spring indeed supplied 50 gallons per minute. We constructed a box around it, captured that flow, diverted it through a short pipe over to a clear well underneath our pump station, would pump it at about 30 gallons per minute up to the reservoir, and whatever overflowed would go to the pond and the property owner's property there. And it's been that way for a long time. Like I mentioned, the water right dates back nearly 50 years. We had a drought condition back in, I think, 05, and we began measuring the output from the outfall into the pond, and it was just over 50 gallons per minute, consistent with our water right. And during the 2015 drought, we did the same thing. We went and measured it. Same thing. It was just over 50 gallons per minute. Didn't change at all through the course of the year. It's been consistent. Huh. But in a very short period of time, it went from 50 gallons per minute to about 2.
Wow. Hmm.
So the pump alarm was because the pump was trying to pump air, and it was a low current alarm. And 2 gallons per minute, unfortunately, isn't quite enough in the wintertime for folks up in Alala Canyon. We were able to reconfigure the controls of the pump so we can take advantage of that 2 gallons per minute, which is roughly 2,900 gallons per day. Folks up there this time of year use about 3,500 to 4,000 gallons per day. We've advised the customers of the situation. We've asked them to conserve water the best that they can. We found a truck in the area that is approved for potable water transport by Department of Health, and we're transporting water up there from our Dryden system in order to keep the reservoir full. We've contacted and actually contracted with Aspect Consulting. They have a team of hydrogeologists, and they're going to be on site Friday, come up and take an initial look and see if we can find what happened with that spring. The good news is they have done this type of work in the past. So they do some work up in the Goldendale area with some springs that move around, and they have had some success finding them when they disappear, but it's not a sure thing. We'll start off with a site visit and then see what happens from there. I wish I had better news. Right now there's a lot of unknowns. We'll know a little bit more after they're up and able to complete a site visit and we'll perform some analysis.
How many residents is on that system?
27.
At 2 gallons a minute.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Less than a toilet flush.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. But over
how many employees do we have up there?
Two.
Only one present.
Only one present. Present. Okay.
So, no, Ron, thank you. It's okay. I've been thinking about that a lot, and yeah, I appreciate the guys. You know, the fact that you guys are on it and making provisions for people to, you know, continue. Again, what's been the response from the customers so far?
Last I heard, nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we made a phone calls for folks we didn't have emails for and sent emails out, of course, of those that we did, and then sent out a postcard on Friday. And it doesn't surprise me too much that we aren't hearing anything, however, because the service is unchanged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the water is still safe to drink, and and they go turn on the tap, but there's still water there.
Yeah.
So you may not have gotten any feedback, but some of us have.
Ah, okay.
not bad.
Okay.
Not bad. But respectful and appreciative of the efforts we're making.
Good. Yeah. Good. Yeah. I like the response time and the response. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other comment?
Okay. Last item, I'm going to ask Greg Carrington to come up and talk about the new agreement with Grant and Douglas.
So, Greg Carrington, Managing Director of Energy Resources. Just wanted to give you an update about an interlocal agreement that Steve will be signing with Douglas and Grant. You all know that we're moving into the independent operations on hourly coordination. This is the first agreement that we're pulling back together where we're going to start rebuilding some of the things that make sense from a coordination perspective. And so this agreement, I just wanted to read the scope of work so you got a sense of it. The parties expect to identify opportunities for cooperative action related to the hydraulic operations. Opportunities could include, but are not limited to, hydraulic exchanges to manage reservoir elevations, unit starts and stops, total dissolved gas, and other project constraints or operations as agreed upon. Each cooperative action will be agreed upon and memorialized in a functional agreement that will be attached to this master agreement. So this is the first in a series of functional agreements that we will reestablish parts of the hourly coordination that currently exist. Our first functional agreement is going to be associated with what's called the Vernita Bar Agreement, and that is where we use some of the storage from our reservoirs to maintain flows downstream of Priest Rapids, and when the fish are there spawning, we want to maintain flows at a certain level. So that'll be the first functional agreement that gets reestablished.
That's the Hanford Reach?
That's for Hanford Reach, yeah.
Did you say this interlocal agreement does include Douglas County?
It's Douglas and Grant.
And yeah. A new Grant. That's, yep. Douglas is kind of is back in.
Yep, and they're going to be going to their boards like on the 21st or whatever their second meeting is within January. Hmm. And so you'll probably be hearing about it, so we wanted to make sure that you're aware. We give the authority to the general manager to sign the interlocal agreements. They still go to their boards for signing of interlocal agreements, so they have to make board presentations, get board approval for their interlocals. Any questions? It's good. I mean, it's good. We're going to be having a data sharing agreement coming up as well with Bonneville Power Administration on making sure we maintain open communications with them in the future as well.
What about with the Bureau of Reclamation? Because they're kind of the big dog upriver.
Yeah.
They are the big dog.
Yeah, upriver. Bonneville is the one that is kind of controlling the releases out of the dam. So our big one would be Bonneville. They're owned by the Bureau and so forth. But we really, the flows are controlled by Bonneville.
All right. Thanks.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. Commissioner items? And I am looking for a sticky note because we need to know a little bit on, no, not a little bit, we need to know on the meeting this month of the 22nd, who's going to be in-house and who's going to be on the phone, and whether we need to, it's a short meeting, and is it advantageous to have it in the morning or the afternoon or both? So those are the questions I have, and I think it'll help staff then plan that meeting much more effectively.
Be on the phone.
Okay, and phone?
I'm on the phone.
Phone.
Randy?
I'm on the phone.
Okay, and
Gary?
I was struggling in my brain with the two R's. Steve, you're going to be here?
Yes.
Okay. Now the question is morning or afternoon or both? Because it's short enough, I think, to fall into a two-hour block.
That's our intent.
Yeah.
I can do either.
Yeah, but could do either would prefer morning?
Yeah, prefer morning too, but I can do either.
I could also do either, but prefer morning.
All right. Well, that without voting... Yeah, okay, message clear.
Commissioner Bowles, how about you? Are you here or are you on the phone?
I'll be here. Yeah. Well,
yeah, so. Better.
I think I'm planning on it. 20 seconds. Steve's here, so that's all that counts. Nope, I'll be here.
Just for coordinating purposes, thanks.
Okay. And then second thing that, you know, I have a note on is as we go into the 2018 year, we're all pretty actively involved in, you know, our trade associations. And so it's the question of who wants to do what.
Oh.
And so what I will do is I will ask staff to put together, you know, all of those things that we participate in. And who's currently has what role in them. And then we can take a look at that, get those out to you, and then we can come back. And I would say the 22nd would not be a good meeting to do that. But the following meeting, I, you know, would like to have the task completed by that point so we can notify the trade agreements who's going to be our representatives at those, at those groups that we associate with. So does that. So there's a takeaway for today, and that'd be extremely helpful. Other commission items? We'll move then to commissioner travel. Commission travel. And Lisa?
Hello, I'm Lisa Sanders, admin and finance. And I've populated our 2018 travel document with a draft list from Waputa. So you know something that should be changed on here. Please let me know. It won't hurt my feelings.
Waputa this week, I will just be there Wednesday night.
Wednesday only? Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll update your hotel.
Lisa, I'm going to check back with you tomorrow and see how I feel, whether or not I'll be going to Waputa.
Okay. Thank you.
You may have to bring a note from your mother.
Well, I hope you feel better.
March, I will not be attending Waputa. Well, I'll be attending, the Water Committee meeting on the 29th, but not the association meeting on the 14th or the 16th.
Okay. That's a yes. And I wanted to ask you, are you attending in February?
No.
Okay.
I am not.
I just wanted to confirm that.
Mm-mm.
in March, my attendance will probably be abbreviated, but I'll talk with you a little bit later about that. The March Wapuda.
Okay.
Probably be just one night, but I got to check how things are.
Perfect. So, Lisa, I want to officially invite all of the commissioners to the NWPPA annual conference. It's in Boise this year, so you could drive.
Is that one here?
Yeah,
it is. It's on page three. I don't know about the two. I don't know anything about the Grove Hotel or the. Well, I kind of know about Hampton Inn and Suites. But anyway, they do a really good job. They have good, really excellent keynote speakers. It's a really fun conference, and I never see any of you there.
I think I'm going to be going.
I hope so. It's great. And you guys have been noticeably absent in the past.
We've been hearing about it.
Good. Good. Not just from me.
No, not just from you. Okay.
So I'll follow up with you three about that.
We would probably then, if there's a majority that's not going to be here, we would probably have to change our May meeting. Because it's our second meeting in May is the 21st. And this conference is between the 20th and the 23rd.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
Okay.
Lisa, will you check and see if the actual conference hotel is the Grove Hotel? I think it is, where the meetings are being held. In Boise.
Looks like they're being held at the Boise Center, and they...
Oh, Boise Center. Oh, yeah, that's... Oh, you're right.
And they had both of these hotels listed, so okay. I'd be happy to check
just
into...
Check the distance, see if they're walking distance, either one of them.
Okay.
I think the Boise Center is connected to the Grove Hotel.
Do you?
Oh, okay.
Appreciate the fact that you've got the whole year on here. This is nice.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And... Initially, my plans are to go to the APPA annual conference in June.
Mine as well.
Okay. So I have Commissioners Bowles, McKenna, and Smith.
Mm-hmm. Potentially.
I'm also planning to do that.
Thank you. I continue working on this document even after it is emailed to you and we print these. So I do have rooms held for the Swinomish, the April association meetings at the Swinomish Casino. I was worried they were going to fill up because of the Tulip Festival. Mm-hmm. So I do have rooms held for that.
Good.
And I will continue booking rooms where we see that, where we know the meetings that are going to be held. And I haven't gotten to all of those yet, but that is definitely my plan.
As a state officer, I anticipate making all of those meetings this year. So.
Okay.
It's just a matter of which days sometimes.
Okay. And I have for APPA and February, I have Commissioners Arsenault and Bowles attending.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have everyone registered for the January meetings this week.
Yes. And Lisa, I need to apologize for getting my registration to you late.
Oh, and you're fine.
No, it doesn't make your job easier.
We got you.
I appreciate it.
And at the DoubleTree, I have you booked for January, February, March. In January, we did not sign the contract that they asked us to sign. So intentionally, I said we weren't authorized to. So where they had government rate available, they gave that to us, which was in January for $128. In February and March, was not available, so we have those rooms held at $159, and we're not locked into those at this point and can move those if that's what you want to do, but I wanted you to be fully informed ahead of time.
Yeah, and I think all five of us are either here or on the phone. I think Lisa are kind of looking at those. There are, you know, there's some new motels in the area of state headquarters. And I think if you look at those and, you know, bring back the figures, we'd be appreciative, because I think if it's a comfortable place and it's at that price, you know, or better, that's, you know, we need to do that.
Is there maybe a list of places that we don't want to stay? Mm-hmm. And then I can check others. I mean, that's what it comes down to, right?
Yeah.
Red Lion and Governor House are really not good places.
Yeah.
Concurred.
Any others? Okay, I will research others and check prices.
And I'll talk with Lena, because she's pretty much up on, you know, things that have been built new and are fairly close.
Oh, okay.
And there are a couple. So let me, you know, look into those and get those to you.
Walking distance is really nice if we can do it.
It is.
Then you don't have to deal with paying parking and moving your car. And that's the Marriott. Isn't that called the Marriott, the one that's been completely remodeled?
Town Place Suites.
It's by Marriott. Town Place Suites.
Yeah.
That's a block away.
Okay.
The only reason we some of us went up there, but their price was high. I think it is right now high.
I think it's lower now.
We'll let
it research.
It should.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And so if there's any changes in dates, meetings that show up or get canceled that we need to change on here, let me know and I'll keep this as updated as possible.
Lisa, for the March 29th Water Committee meeting, mm-hmm. So that would mean I would need to stay March 28th because it's a 9:00 start.
Okay.
I'm not sure what day that is. I don't have my calendar in front of me.
And you have a hotel preference?
What day?
March 28th. So is that Wednesday.
Wednesday?
Yeah, that's what I thought. Either the DoubleTree or the Marriott, the Town Place Suites. Those are both walking distance. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone else plan to attend that?
God bless Ann.
That's what I thought.
I like it.
You do. I appreciate your work there.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
All right. I will keep holding hotels where I can. I will make these updates and check into the Olympia hotels and follow up with Dennis on those. Follow up with.
And I'll be able to give you another July date. They've just requested our available dates for the APPA July meeting in DC. You haven't got it on your calendar, but I'll get it there.
Okay.
Yeah.
That'd be perfect. Then Commissioner McKenna, this week, Wednesday only, and Commissioner Arsenault, you'll follow up with me with this so we can cancel if we need to within 24 hours?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
Thank you, Lisa.
You're Thanks. Welcome. Happy New Year.
You too as well.
Thank you.
And thank you for doing this.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Somebody had to straighten this out.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth?
Follow up on delegation of action items?
There are actually quite a few, and there's quite a few from today, too. So a number of them were covered this morning. On Arondo, there was the issue of trying to get the results for Douglas County residents. We've shown you what we've got, at least, to look at potential modifications to Alternative 1. This was the Commissioner Arsenault alternative. We covered that this morning. And the costs and sources of irrigation water to Arondo. So I think we've covered that as well in terms of what the water uses are. There was an action item on the Chelan Planet Walk. We are now working to to see if we can resolve the issues regarding the permit. So we're working with the Rotary, Schlein Rotary, to try to identify and resolve those. We're also in the midst of doing a survey for community reaction. We have a little less than 60 respondents so far. The majority positive. The ones who are not so positive have some pointed comments. So a little bit of both, but majority are positive, and we'll get you final results. It's, the survey is not done yet, so it's just an interim report. Yeah. Eric is working on the follow-up to the shoreline management plan discussion that occurred with the county commissioners. We'll be bringing back a work plan probably in the February meeting around that. We have a carryover item from before. Mike Coleman is still working on a historic comparison of the maximum monthly bandwidth usage, and hope to have that for you in the February meeting as well. There's some challenges with respect to gathering that data. Any questions about that? Okay. So from this meeting, again, quite a few on Arondo. We had three items. The cost of operating Manson Parks if we were in charge. A long-term look at native landscapes, long-term life cycle costs, and the Arondo stakeholder outreach on park use. So just trying to get a better understanding of how Arondo residents are using the park and what information can we bring to bear on that. There was a request for conservation savings for the last 5 years. Greg answered that for 10 years when he was up here, so I'm going to call that one
works.
Done.
That works.
Eric's going to be thinking some more about obligation to serve, and we'll be doing some additional discussion with you about how obligation to serve translates into the situation that we're currently confronted with. We're going to think some more about presenting Cycle of Personal Ownership Award winners at board meetings. We've got an assignment to look at the Commissioner Trade Association assignments from this past year, so we can think about for this next year. I'm just trying to make a list. I think that's for NWPPA, APPA, WAPUTA, and Energy Northwest.
Yeah, I actually think that we have that as an ongoing document. Sheila maintained it annually with all of them. And my recollection last year is we actually submitted a statement that made each of you alternates for the rest in case you had to cover each other at meetings. So I'll work with Rebecca and Teresa and get that.
Okay. There's also the WAPUTA assignments
right.
for committees.
Right.
Yeah, that's where we get a little confused. Okay. One of the places.
So we'll make sure that committee assignments for all of those groups are identified as well. And then we need to take a look at the May 21 board meeting and think about how we'll manage that. So we'll come back with a proposal at a future meeting about that. Miss anything?
I think we're good. Okay. So looking around the room, I see no one who would offer additional public comment. So are there any other matters of general business that need to come before the commission? And then before I, hearing none, before I say anything about executive session, Eric had given us a copy of something, and you watching me fumble, I cannot find it, but it just appeared. Thank you. So we will be going into executive session following about a five-minute break to consider the selection of a site for the acquisition of real estate by lease or purchase when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause the likely increase in price pursuant to RCW 4230-1101B. And what time we'll start at 25 after? And about how much time will we need?
I would say an hour.
An hour. Okay. So we'll take a seven-minute recess and reconvene at 2:25 for approximately 1 hour. That was powerful.
I think she's out.
This is the Schlein County Board of Directors at our January 8th meeting coming out of executive session, and there is a need to extend our executive session for an additional 15 minutes with the anticipation of closing at 3:45.
This is Chelan County Board of Directors. Our time is 4:44. We're coming out of executive sessions where no decisions nor were any votes taken. Is there anything else to come before the commission today? Hearing none, we're adjourned.